We'd like to welcome you to the July 23rd, 2025 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of the commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas having a special historical, cultural, or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's tourism, its culture, and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by the City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or non-profit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance are used by the commission to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks within the Savannah local historic and conservation districts. The commission cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangements of structures are not within the commission's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decisions. Please turn off all cell phones, and let's start with the sign postings. Are any members of the board have any issues with any sign postings of any of today's agenda items? Okay, seeing none, Brian, I believe you had a motion you wanted to make.
Mm-hmm. Brian Woods, under Robert's Rules of Order, I want to make a motion to reconsider the petition of MPW Construction LLC, Michael Woodard, 25-002761-COA, 1001 Gooch Street, contributing demolition.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, having a motion and properly second, we will now go ahead and take a vote. I'll start with Courtney. This is for, you're voting for to reconsider the item that was a voter on the last meeting.
Courtney Bonnie, I approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Libana, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Patricia's not here. Okay, great. Jeff Entrick, I approve, so the motion carries. Caitlin, you're going to give us a presentation on the item again?
Yes.
Okay, let me just go get... All right, just get this pulled up here. All right, so this project was first presented at the June 25th meeting. The applicant is requesting approval for the demolition of a listed contributing resource at 1001 Gooch Street in the Carver Village Conservation District. So just kind of go over some of the images of what were submitted of the current status. Clearly uninhabitable, but had been vacant for quite some time. Show some other photos here. And these are just some of the images for that staff found during the staff research. So there was Yeah, some sandboard maps from 1950 through 1966 show the same footprint of the house on the lot. We included the Google Street View images from 2012 and 16, showing the abandoned condition of the house, and then current site visit photos showing what the building looks like at present. And I'll just go through a little bit of the staff report so we can understand the process of what we're doing, how it's evaluated. So it was built in 1948 and is listed as a contributing resource in the Carver Village Conservation District. It's a one-story cinder block structure in the American small house style commonly seen throughout Carver Village. The property is on the corner of Googe and Winburn Streets. Based on the 2005 Carver Village Neighborhood Redevelopment Plan, the property has been documented as a vacant site since at least that time. Google Street View images that we just saw show how it's fallen into a deeper state of deterioration. In 2016, the roof has started to decay, but the walls are still intact. At present, the roof is caved in, though it may also be potential demolition. And the wall facing Winburn Street is collapsed, leaving the house open and exposed to the elements. So when we review something for demolition in a conservation district, it's similar but not identical to how it's reviewed in the overlay districts for, you know, downtown and all the other ones that we deal with in HPC. So all requests for demolition within a conservation district are reviewed by MPC staff prior to the issuance of a demolition permit. Demolition shall include the removal of 50% or more of a building. So we'll determine the contributing status. This is already identified as a contributing resource. It has already been deemed to meet the criteria for contributing status. Staff has reviewed the criteria based on the current condition of the building. These are the items that it's reviewed by. It's at least 50 years old, possesses integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. The building was constructed in 1948 and has lost integrity of design, materials, and workmanship. The setting and location of the site itself have not changed aside from the dilapidated state of the building. The integrity of this particular house is such that it has lost some of the contributing resource criteria due to its deteriorated condition. Then we look at, is it associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, or is associated with the lives of significant persons of the past? The development of Carver Village began with a plan in 1947, approved by the City Council the next year. It was slated to include 600 buildings and two parks. And it was one of the earliest developments that required the Federal Housing Administration to put aside redlining guidelines, which were standard practice at the time, initiated in the 1930s to steer private mortgage investors away from majority-minority neighborhoods. So Carver Village is socially and architecturally significant. It was the first of its kind, providing low-cost loans to African-American homebuyers and providing city funds for infrastructure. So embodies the distinctive characteristics of a type period, method of construction, work of a master, etc. There was a design competition to determine the style of houses to be built for this development. The winner was Cletus Bergen, a prominent Savannah architect known for his work with public housing projects such as Yamacraw Village. Many of the houses in Carver Village are intact, and the loss of one blighted property such as this would not compromise the significance of the whole neighborhood. It is but one of hundreds of houses that contribute to the significance of Carver Village. While this history is absolutely important, the loss of one deteriorated building will not undermine the importance to the local and national history associated with Carver Village. We look at criteria for demolition. It's either required, it needs to meet one of these. It's required to alleviate a threat to public health or safety, or it's required to avoid exceptional practical difficulty or undue hardship upon any owner of a specific property. So for criterion A, 1001 Googe Street has been listed as a vacant property since at least 2005. As seen in the Google Street View images, its condition has only deteriorated further in recent years to the point where the wall and roof material have collapsed, leaving a blighted building open to the elements. This can be seen as a threat to public health and safety. And for criterion B, the applicant did not include the information, but staff finds that criterion A was met, though there may be a hardship, but we did not have that information. for additional stipulations. Staff recommends documenting the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition. And then within the Carver Village, Flatman Village Conservation District, the recombination of lots shall be prohibited. So although the Conservation District ordinance for demolition of contributing resources is not pending on a required COA for a new development plan, this condition is stated to ensure that a recombination is not included as a part of the new construction for the site. So staff recommendation is to approve the demolition request for the dilapidated building at 1001 Googe Street with the following conditions: because there are not sufficient criteria to support the building remaining contributing due to its deteriorated condition, and because the demolition criteria are met. One is document the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition, and two, ensure that a recombination is not included as part of any new construction proposed for the site. Thank you.
Katrina Hornung, can you just recap? I was not at the meeting last month. What was the decision last month?
The decision was a denial.
Thank you.
Which the decision is currently suspended while this is taking place.
So do we have a new motion from board members? Any discussion?
Brian Woods, I'd like to move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of MPW Construction LLC, Michael Woodard, 25-002761-COA, 1001 Goose Street, contributing demolition, based on staff recommendation.
Kathy Ledbino, discussion wasn't had.
I asked for discussion. I didn't get any response.
I didn't know that was an ask. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was an
ask. I apologize. Yes, Kathy Ledbino, I would like to discuss. Am I starting?
Yes.
Okay. Terrific. Kathy Ledbina, I feel that this building is a contributing resource in the neighborhood. It is one of several, I understand. But once this is demolished, there is no control over what is constructed in its place. The building itself does retain its integrity. It's concrete block. Concrete block is probably the easiest to restore and rehabilitate that building. The roof, yes, is collapsed on the rear portion, but if you look right there, can you focus in on this, the picture right there? We go right here. You can see that the building really does retain a lot of its historic detail. And I feel that this building can be saved, and it's a contributing building in a threatened historic district or conservation district in Savannah.
Are there any other comments from board members?
Yes, Courtney Bonney. I think, you know, from some of our discussion last week, I would be leaning more towards continuing this and getting a structural report similar to other demolition requests that have, you know, third party assessments to provide more information on, you know, if there are structural issues with the mortar within the building and other sort of things other than just kind of what we're presented with here. So, that's something that I would like to see, is maybe continuing this item and getting some more information before we make a decision one way or the other.
Just wanted to interject, Caitlin, sorry. Because it's a conservation district, for the overlay historic districts, that is a requirement, but it is not required for conservation districts. So I don't know if that it can be required, but that was just something I wanted to point out in the differences between the two.
Do we have any other board member comments?
Brian Woods, I just want to point out the picture we are looking at right now is from like 2016, but just the current state of this building is, you scroll down a little bit more, it's like that now. It's just wide open and mostly gone. It looks like a bomb exploded inside the house. I don't know. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, yeah, it's, you know, cinder block, a lot of it can be salvaged, I guess, but I mean, it is just a blight on the neighborhood. And as it stands right now, it's a danger to the people living in that neighborhood. I mean, wildlife, the grass is growing up so tall around it currently, like this picture doesn't show it, but the grass is like 3 feet high now. When I stopped to look at it, I had people stop and ask me, did I own it? Ask me what I paid them to cut the grass. Somebody needs to tear that down. The people in the neighborhood don't want this house standing any longer than it has to be. So yeah, I just want that to be considered.
Kathy Levina, I do agree that it may be a danger in its present state. However, the owner is here and active and is wanting to do something with this property. So we know he can and he has the financial capability. That he chooses to neglect the property and leave it in this state is really quite a tragedy. And building code compliance should be on him for the grass being cut to secure the property and to not make it a danger in the neighborhood. I agree, but that's something that can be corrected.
Do we have any other board member comments?
Pam Miller's applicant here.
Do we have anyone online? Ms. Melanie would like to speak.
Hi, Melanie Wilson, Executive Director. I just wanted to just remind you that the applicant may not be here because we had to continue this meeting from the previous time that we met. You know, they work and they have other responsibilities, so it's not as easy for people to adjust their schedule when we have to change our meeting time. And I think that that is something that you ought to consider with regards to this. The other thing too, and I just want to reemphasize this, there's things that you really have to consider. One, it is not a requirement for this person to have a structural engineer report. It's a conservation area. It is not a traditional overlay. The second thing is that it is very true what Mr. Woods said with regards to people complaining about the impact that this is having on their property values. If you live in the neighborhood and you wanted to even get a loan to fix up your house, you can't really do it when you have properties like this adjacent to your house. I think that you almost have to take a step back and give some thought with regards to the fact that the recommendation, at least from staff standpoint, you can do what you want to do, but I do feel compelled to explain a little bit about where we came from with regards to doing the analysis and review on this. You're looking at a property that's a center built, it's center block, as you indicated. The recommendation is to do some, deconstruct it. So they're going to have to incur some cost to do that. The other thing, which is really more important than anything, is that it's a public health and safety issue. And I don't think that you can discount that and say that the city of Savannah will take care of it. If they had of it, wouldn't have gotten into the condition that it's in right now. And that's just the truth. I'm sure that the community and the community as a whole would like to have more resources to deal with code enforcement, but it's a limited resource. So you do have to give some thought to if this does not come down and that, you know, the city could just go to court and they would push it down anyway. And there wouldn't be any conservation or anything with regards to any materials that could be salvaged because they do have that right. So I at least wanted to put that out for you to think, to give some consideration for as you are dealing with your review on this. You can make whatever recommendation that you want to make, but I don't want you to put so much credence that the city is going to even deal with the grass cutting because it should have never gotten to be as high as it is. I don't know if you've been by there, but it's dangerous with regards to what condition is now. And at some point in time, when things become public health safety, it trumps everything.
Can I ask a question, Melanie or Ms. Mm-hmm. Wilson? What stops then the idea of demolition because of neglect if we're
The thing is that, you know, and I'm going to be candid, it seems like every time there's something that goes into certain neighborhoods, everybody wants to get real strict about demolition by neglect. Demolition by neglect has been happening all over this city, and I think that you all would probably agree to that. But the thing that stops demolition by neglect is enforcement. I mean, we can all agree that there needs to be better enforcement with regards to minimum housing code, but that's not the case. So when you have a situation like this, in this particular case, it's in a conservation district. It's not in a traditional historic district. You have limited resources. The only thing that we can do is continue to make the request. And trust me, I make it all of the time for the city to do a better job with regards to review and inspections. And they've beefed it up. When I first got here, we had a ton of demolition neglect through the city. They have increased their inspections, but what's happening too is that these things go to court and the judge immediately says, okay, well, you tear it down. So it bypasses you anyway, and you don't get whatever, component that could be salvaged with regards to reconstructing this. And the applicant very well could deal with, the thing that protects the neighborhood. And this is the other thing to consider. Is the condition about recombination. I put that on there when we were dealing with the review. And that was because the thing that makes Carver Village, really Carver Village, besides the size of the housing, is the size of the lots. That's huge. They can't do combinations. Whatever happens on that property is going to be built within the confines of the lot size. And that's going to limit what happens with regards to new construction. That's huge. Because that is what protects the pattern and the historic nature of Carver Village. So look at it as this thing that is a neighborhood. The village itself is what has the recognition. You've got a number of houses that are in the neighborhood that represent the construction that was put in place at the time. It's not like this is the only one. You have a number of homes that still reflect the housing type during that time. But, you know, they've got a lot of other special conditions that are taking place in the Carver Village neighborhood just by the sheer fact that it was built in the 30s and 40s, that they're having to, address. But I have had several folks to reach out to me to talk about this. And that's the only reason I'm speaking, because, as you know, normally I wouldn't be up here having this conversation with you, but, you know, they're concerned, and they are concerned that it seems that every time there's something in the neighborhood that could potentially help make the neighborhood look better, and this is an aesthetic nail, that there's always some barrier. And, you know, you could say you're not going to do anything, and it could stay as a blighted property for another year, because it could take that long to go through courts. But, you know, at some point you do have to also give some thought to the ethical issue of public health, safety, and general welfare of the people who live in the neighborhood. I'll be glad to answer any questions, but I did feel compelled to at least let you know what's going on with that area. Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Levine, my question is, did you contact the city of Savannah and ask them to look at this property and to request fencing or cutting of the lawn and stuff like that?
We contact the city of Savannah about a number of properties.
About this property,
absolutely. And as far as fencing is concerned, they can't make the person put fencing up. That becomes
They put the fencing up and then they charge the owner. I mean, that's what they do in other neighborhoods.
I don't know what they do in this neighborhood, right? Well, in some cases they do and in some cases they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a consistent thing. I think we can all agree that's one of the challenges, is that you don't get consistent enforcement of the rules and policies that are in place. And the other thing too is, from a historic standpoint, if you did put a fence up, let's say that they did do that, is that going to really do anything to improve the condition that the community is having to look at and live next to? When you have dilapidated property, and this is a dilapidated property that's in really bad shape, you have pieces falling, even with fencing up, you still have other issues like rodents and other things, especially when you're in an area that has a lot of water issues. And that's the one thing, unfortunately, that's not discussed. They've got a lot of issues with stormwater management over in that area. And when it rains, I could be glad to share some pictures. It's unbelievable with regards to what happens. You've seen it, so you know what I'm talking about, Ms. Levine. You know, it's a unique area of the city. They've got additional circumstances that they have to address and to deal with. And I do think that that is something that, you know, you should take into consideration. Again, I'm only here because I've had several folks, I mean, people stop me on the street talking about, you know, some of the things that happen with regards to some of these demolition requests, especially in an area that is conservation. It is not a traditional historic district with design standards and things of that nature. The subdivision itself is the design standard.
Thank you.
Again, I'll be glad to answer any other questions. Thank you for your indulgence to let me speak on this.
Are there any other board comments? Okay, at this time, I'd like to call for some sort of motion.
Brian Woods, I'd like to make a motion to approve the petition of MPW Construction LLC, Michael Woodard, 25-002761-COA, 1001 Goose Street, contributing demolition based on staff recommendation.
Katrina Horner, I second the motion.
Okay, great. Having a motion and seconded, I'd like to call for a vote. Let's start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Brian Woods, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levina, deny.
Scott Krotzer, deny.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Notarico, approve. Motion carries. All right, now let's go on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or commissioner who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Scott Krotzer, Mr. Chair, do we need to remove it in order to put conditions, Caitlin? Would like to remove 215 Java Street.
Let's see here, 215 Java Street. Which item number
one.
Is that?
Item one.
All right, item one.
Okay, great. Are there any others?
Kathy Levine, I have to recuse myself from item number number 11. So if we could split the consent agenda into two. I'd like to vote on the others, but I can have to recuse myself from number 11, petition of J. Elder Studios, 8 West Victory.
Okay. Hearing only those, is there any member of the public with any items? Okay. Hearing none, I would like to approve the consent agenda with the suspension of item 1 going to the regular agenda and call for a vote. Actually, for a motion.
When you make your motion, can you just say when you want that on the agenda, either at the beginning or the end for Java Place?
Yeah. Someone want to make a motion?
Just a quick question. Is a applicant here, petitioner here for that? If not, I kind of feel like we need to let them know.
I sent an email out during the pre-meeting to, it's Beth Barrows. I don't know if she's online.
What's her name again?
Beth Barrows. We do tell everyone on the consent agenda to at least attend virtually in case something like this happens, but we may not.
Well, first we need a
Courtney Bonney, I make a motion that we move item 1 of the consent agenda to the top of the regular agenda.
Scott Krotzer, second.
Okay. So, proffered and second. Let's go with a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Dantrica, approve. The consent agenda is approved, with the exception of item 1, which will be moved to the, you said the front or the back?
Could, if we put it at the end, we could call the applicant, if you don't mind.
Okay, so we'll put that at the end. Okay. True, let's go on to the next one.
All right.
Adoption of the agenda. Are there any questions about the agenda? Can I get a motion?
This is Pam Miller. I move that we accept the agenda with the change just mentioned.
Katrina Horning, I second.
Let's take a vote. We'll start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Yeah.
We just did.
I guess.
Yeah. We asked for changes.
We did. Okay. We took the vote on the consent agenda. Kaylin, we did take a vote on the consent agenda.
You could restate it. Or
I'm sorry.
Did you do it in the way that excluded number 11 on there?
Did you do that, exclude number 11?
Or have you, be recused from number 11?
Okay, so let's do this over again. So I'm asking for a motion on the consent agenda that will take item 1 and remove it to the regular agenda, and that will exclude item 11.
I so move.
Well, you want to make that motion?
Yeah. Kathy Levina, I move that we adopt the consent agenda with the following changes. Moving item number 1, your exterior pros, 1215 Java Place, to the regular agenda at the very end, and excluding number 11, 8 West Victory, petition of J. Elder Studios.
Katrina Hornung, I second the motion.
Okay, having a motion and seconded, let's do a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Okay, now let's do a motion for item number 11 from the consent agenda.
Recuse her?
No, just to approve it, and then she'll recuse herself on the vote.
Okay, I make a motion to approve petition of J. Elder Studio 25-003311-COA 8 West Victory Drive.
Courtney Bonney, second.
Okay, having a motion and seconded, let's go for a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine,
recuse.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Jeff Dentrica, approve. Motion carries.
Right.
Okay, so now let's go on to the adoption of the agenda.
Scott Krotzer, I move to adopt the agenda with the addition of item number 1 from the consent agenda added to the end.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Okay, having a motion second, and let's do a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Dentrica, approve. The motion carries. We have no items requested to be removed from the final agenda. We will now go to the continued.
The minutes of the past meeting.
We need to do the minutes of the past meeting. Approval of the minutes. Can I get a motion?
Move we approve the minutes of the previous meeting.
Kathy Levine, a second.
Let's call for a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, abstain.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Motion carries. We have nothing requesting to be removed. We will now go to the continued agenda. Can I get a motion on that?
Katrina Horning, I move we continue, or we approve the continued agenda.
Scott Krotzer, second.
Okay, let's do a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Motion carries. Now we will go into the regular agenda. We will start with the petition of Brandon Scali for 25-001124 COA 114 West Duffy Street, new construction, small, part 1 and 2.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant's requesting approval to construct an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property located at 114 West Duffy Street. So just for a little project history, it was first presented at the April 23rd, 2025 HPC meeting. At that time, commissioners discussed their concerns with the number of variances that were originally requested with the project and asked whether it was possible to revise the design to reduce or eliminate the variance request. So the project has now been revised where no variances are being pursued. The setbacks are now met. So you can see on the site plan. The setbacks are now met and the building size is within the 40% of the originally, of the original plan, or the existing building, sorry. The side stair that was going to be in the side setback here is now to the front elevation that faces the house. So just to kind of go over the changes here. So this went from a two-car to a one-car to be able to scale it down a little bit. So this floor plan was revised to also have the stairs on this front elevation that's not visible from the public right-of-way or minimally. So here's the updated elevations. Materials are the same as previously presented. The staff found as before that they were, that they met the standards. And that much of this project does meet the design standards. For the square footage, initially it would have brought the lot coverage to 61%, and now with the scale down 478 square feet ADU, it's 58%. So that standard is met, and staff really didn't have any concerns with this scaled down design, feeling that it does meet the conditions that were placed at the last meeting and is within, you know, the setback areas where the variances are no longer required, while also ensuring other property members, as there was on 116 recently approved, also had the 3-foot setbacks. So staff found these were sufficiently met. And with that, staff recommend to approve the request to construct an accessory dwelling unit on the property at 114 West Duffy Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I will be happy to take your questions.
Anyone have questions of staff? Okay, hearing none. Can we have the petitioner?
Hi, I'm Shelby Scally with Scally Design Construct, and I'm here to answer any questions. I do want to point out, can you control the screen? Can you control page A6? I think it's the roof. And yes. So I do want to point out that there's been one modification asked of the client, and that is to add an additional skylight opposite, so on the northwest, let me see if I can, yeah, so right here. It wouldn't be visible from the street, but I just want to point out that that is a slight modification that the client has asked for. So an additional skylight to the roof, but other than that.
Thank you. Staff, any questions of the petitioner?
Scott Grotzer, I want to commend you on working within the variances. I think that's very admirable for you to redesign it completely.
Yeah.
So commission appreciates.
Of course. Work. Yeah. The client was not exactly happy, but happy to work within it. I would say this is a definitely interesting site because it's a center home in a row of townhomes. So they have quite the hardship compared to their neighbors. They have, I think, the smallest site adjacent to them because they're connected homes is 7 feet larger. So it was definitely hard on them, but they were happy to amend.
Any questions from the board? All right, hearing none, is there anybody in the public or online that wishes to comment?
No, sir.
Okay, we have no one that wants to comment. Let's close this to public discussion. Is there any internal board discussion we need to take up? Okay, hearing none, can I call for a motion?
Scott Krotzer, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Braden Scully, 114 West Duffy Street, new construction, small parts 1 and 2, 25-001124 COA. Because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth by the City of Savannah's zoning ordinance.
Katrina Horning, I second the motion.
Okay, having a motion and seconded, let's call for a vote. Want to start with Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Drake, approve. The motion carries. We'll go on to the next item. The petition of Sawyer Design 25-003139 COA 217 East Park Avenue, new construction, small part 1.
Good afternoon. This is Kelly. So the applicant is requesting approval of new construction small part 1 and 2 for height and mass for a two-story primary building and a two-story accessory dwelling unit at 217 East Park. So the property currently is a vacant lot. As you can see, it's the middle property. It's flanked on either side by two-story structures. One is contributing and one is not at this time. So this is the proposed front elevation at the side along the ADU, other side, and then the rear. So staff surveyed the immediate area and found that there are a number of two- and one-story contributing buildings in the immediate context. So staff found that the overall height of both the main building and the accessory building to meet the standards. For the primary structure, staff found that the window opening pattern is visually compatible, but staff is concerned about the limited number of window openings on the second story of the lane elevation of the accessory dwelling unit. There are just a little too few, and the symmetry is not there that you typically see in this district. Staff has no concerns about the front and rear porch as on the main house as designs are visually compatible. Staff did have had to look around a little bit to see if there's any similar examples of the side porch. That's something you don't see as commonly in Savannah. In the immediate context, 105 East Duffy has a similar configuration with a front porch and a side porch. Looking a little further out, staff found multiple homes on East Gwinnett between Price and Abercore Street that also have side porches. So staff found that that was compatible in this case. The materials provided, staff found that they were visually compatible. There are a number of details and elements that will need to be addressed in part 2 of this application. One has to do with the front piers on the front porch. This was not provided as, that is not the front elevation. So let me pull up the plans real quick. Sorry for that confusion on that one. There we go. That looks a little bit better there. Yeah. So the applicant did not provide express piers on the front foundation that is required for the ordinance. So staff is requesting that that be included with the application. Staff is also requesting applicant clarify the window transparency on one side on this elevation right here. The remainder of the elevations appear to meet minimum transparency requirement. This one is difficult to tell, so the staff just wants that clarified. Again, in this case, transparency will only be 25% due to the fire code. The applicant should also provide the porch materials as they were not noted in the plans and confirm that the balustrades on the porches are no more than 4 inches on center. The applicant should also confirm the overall height of the fence. And then also some zoning things that will need to be addressed with this project. One has to do with the eaves. The eaves are within the 3-foot setback that is required for eaves. The front porch is also within the 3-foot setback that is required for front porches. As some of y'all may note on the site plan, it's also encroaching into the public right-of-way, so the applicant will need a encroachment permit from Real Estate Services for that encroachment. So again, get that encroachment and then talk with Development Services about the variances. So with that, staff is requesting, recommending approval of the new construction small part 1 height and mass for the two-story infill, with the conditions you see on the screen to be addressed in part 2 of this application. So with that, does the board have any questions or concerns?
All right, hearing none, is the petitioner here?
I believe he is as well.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is John Leonard with Sawyer Design. Kelly, thank you for the great review. You were very comprehensive going through everything, so that was great. And I think we'll be able to work with you on getting the clarifications as we move over to part two. I do have two questions really that I'd like to put out to the board to see what the best way to address them. Number one is the site location. Then number two are the express piers requirement. To start with the site location, yes, we do know that we'll have to go through and get an encroachment permit. That seems to be a matter of just going through the motion with the real estate services aspect of things. But we are concerned about trying to keep the house in line with the neighbors to the left and the right, and feel that we won't be able to do that if we push the house further back on the property. But I'll leave that up to you guys to say one way or another. Should we push it back? Should we leave it forward? And open to suggestions for that. And then from the express piers aspect, I want to point out that, you know, the front steps and the side porch we all have with a stone finish versus a wood or a traditional wood deck finish. And if you look around the city, most of the porches that have a stone finish versus the wood do not have express piers. We don't have a problem putting express piers on, but feel that, you know, will that force us then to have to look at a wood style deck on the side, which we don't want to do, but would prefer to leave it flat more in a traditional setting. With that, I'll answer any questions that everybody may have.
Okay.
Kathy Lubina, are you agreeable with the window transparency of 30% on the left elevation?
Oh, yeah. Could you clarify that? All the windows are completely clear. There isn't a opaqueness associated with them or anything like that. And then we are, you know, within the 3.5-foot setback, limited to a 25% opening requirement or a maximum of that to meet all the fire rating construction.
Yes, to address your question, for transparency, mm-hmm. the number, it has to be at least 25% or 30% of the wall needs to have openings. So I can't tell, like, based on this, whether or not the meets the 25% or 30%. And then you are correct that fire code does trump, so 25% in this case. You see it clarify how many windows are right here.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the reason that the number of windows are there, so we can meet that rule.
That's 25%?
No, we're below the 25%. So as soon as we go above the 25%, then the way that the fire rating code goes is, I guess we're not allowed to have more than 25%.
Correct.
And right now we have less than that.
Yeah, so per fire code, 25% is the max.
Yeah.
And in this case, we're not going to require a special exception because of that, but we're suggesting that they meet the 25%.
Maximum.
Yeah.
Correct. So are you agreeable to meeting the 25% maximum?
Yeah.
Because we require a 30% maximum. So
right.
That's the compromise is a 25.
Yeah. No, we can, I'll make sure we show that math on the next review.
Any further comments or questions from staff?
I had a question. You mentioned the encroachment being because you're trying to stay in line with the surrounding properties. But
correct.
According to the site plan, it's not in line with either. So I'm a little confused on what the encroachment is for.
And the encroachment would be for the front porch itself?
I know where. I'm just saying, like,
go back a little bit. Can you zoom in on that guy? Everybody else see the zoom in as we go in? Right now, what we've done is basically drawn a line from sort of the far corners of each of the neighbors, and then the front elevation, not including the porch, is in line with that angle, which forces that front porch to be pushed into the sidewalk on the city property. Now, what we could do is actually push the house back so that that front porch is now, you know, without measuring it, say 18 inches to 20 inches pushed back onto the property.
Yeah, I guess my thought here is that that's not necessarily a meaningful architectural reason to be encroaching into the right of way. So I would I think it needs to be moved back, because I don't think as a pedestrian, you know, you're going to be making the connection that the buildings are angled. You know what I mean? I mean, it's more about like the consistency of the street pattern. And I don't think that right. a whole inch, you know,
that's exactly what we're trying to do, is make sure we get that street pattern correct. So just to clarify, from your perspective, you would prefer to see that the porch aligned with the front mass of the left and right house versus the mass of our house in line with the house to the left and right.
Yeah, I mean, I can appreciate wanting to kind of keep things in line and that sort of thing. I think from what I'm seeing here is I don't think that that encroachment is making a meaningful.
Okay. Just, that's the reason I brought the question up.
Right,
I want to make sure we set it in the right spot.
Just to make things easier on y'all. That's my only.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board members? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any member of the public that wants to comment? I don't see any speaker cards. I'm going to assume not. At this point, we will close this to public comment and go into board discussion. Board members, are there any comments?
Scott Kratzer, I agree with Mrs. Bonney about the encroachment. So I think that that condition can be removed. And I also agree with the petitioner's comments on the piers with a brick home.
Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, can I get a motion?
Katrina Hornung. 1 second.
So is the commission amicable about removing the conditions of the piers and the encroachment requirement?
You want to make that motion?
I think the condition would change to pushing the building back so that it's no longer within the encroachment.
And the 25%.
Katrina Horning. I move that the Historic Preservation approve the petition of Sawyer Design 25-003139-COA 217 East Park Avenue with the following conditions. Staff recommendations 1, 3, 4, 6, and then confirm the window transparency for the left elevation of the primary building at a maximum of 25%, and an added condition that the front porch stays in line with the property. Correct? All right. Because a petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Got a second?
Scott Kratzer, a second.
Okay, having a motion and properly seconded, we'll call to a vote. We'll start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Ventrico, approve. Motion carries. Thank you. Let's go on to the petition of Sawyer Design, 513 East Henry Street, 25-003138 COA, addition and variance recommended request.
So again, afternoon, this is Kelly. The applicant is requesting approval for a two-story rear addition and for a variance recommendation request to allow the western elevation of the addition to encroach into the side setback for the property located at 513 East Henry Street. Photos you see on your screen are the current site conditions. The footprint of the main house has remained relatively intact, though the front porch was enlarged sometime after 1916. Also, the rear one-story porch that you see now was constructed sometime between 1966 and 2008, so it will be treated as a non-contributing portion of this building. So with that, staff has concerns about the overall design of this proposed addition. As it's currently designed, it reads as part of the original home and does not read as a later addition. As a note, yeah, the current addition is the same width as the historic house, but it is obviously shorter and reads as subordinate. Staff doesn't recommend that the height of the addition or the proposed addition be brought down so that it's subordinate with the primary building. The applicant will need to provide a full scope of work for the one-story rear addition, as this will influence staff's recommendation. In email with the applicant, they indicated that the majority of the existing back of the house will be retained. Select plans in the submittal packet also indicate that the side of existing house to remain as is. Select floor plans, however, indicate that the existing back of structure to be removed and replaced with new construction. The plans also show changes to the window opening and suggest that some degree of work will take place. It is known that the rear wall and roof of the current addition will be removed for this new addition. So with that, if the majority of the side walls need to be reconstructed or rebuilt, staff recommends that the side walls be inset further to differentiate this rear addition from the primary property. This will also address some of the setback concerns that are brought up. If the bulk majority of the side elevations will remain, staff finds that the portion of the addition that's in the same footprint as the existing addition can be that same width, but the portion that extends back further, I believe it's about 5 feet longer, should be inset to be further differentiated. It's a very hard word for me to say, apparently. This discussion will also influence a variance recommendation request as part of this project. The western or left elevation of this building is within the side setback. At the narrowest point, the exterior wall is 9 3/4 inches from the side property line, where it needs to be a minimum of 3 feet. The eaves are also on the property line at the narrowest point, when they also need to be a minimum of 3 feet. Like I already mentioned, additional information is needed for a full review of the variance recommendation criteria. The one-story rear addition is an existing condition that's been present since at least 2008. If applicant intends to retain the majority of this addition, staff finds that the request is generally consistent with the comp plan standards, that the current addition is a special condition, and that this is not a special privilege and the minimal variance necessary. If the side walls need to completely be reconstructed and rebuilt, staff finds that all the variance criteria are not met, as this will effectively be a new construction, so the applicant could pull the walls in and meet the standards and meet the side setbacks. Beyond the rear addition, the applicant is proposing to move over this upper window so that it is symmetrical with the lower door. Staff found no evidence that this window is ever shifted over at any given time, so staff recommends that window remain in its current position unless there's evidence that shows something to the contrary. Staff also noted that there were window changes made to the left elevation. It's kind of hard to see in this photo. But currently, the lower window is a double window. The upper two windows are of different lengths. As shown on the plans, the double window becomes a single window, and these two windows are the same lengths. So staff just wants some clarity, kind of like what's happening right there. There. I lost track of my notes there. It's also unclear how much of the addition's foundation is being either replaced, repaired, and filled. Again, it's kind of difficult to tell in this photo, but a portion of the current one-story addition is currently infilled with lattice work, suggesting that it's either a pure foundation or it's been removed at some point. Google also seems to indicate that that was an open area at some point. So staff just wants clarity in what's being installed, kind of what's happening with that, because the plans showed as one consistent foundation. Staff also wants clarity if any of the addition on the main house will be touched. Is it the same situation? Plans showed as one continuous foundation, but at least a portion of the foundation is covered in lattice work. Again, kind of hard to tell in this photo. There was also kind of one minor thing that was noted when prepping for this meeting that staff failed to mention in the staff report. It has to do with the chimneys. There are current chimneys on the home. Plans don't show these. There's no note of what's happening to those chimneys on the plans, so staff wants some clarity. If the applicant intends to remove those chimneys, we would recommend that they stay because, of course, chimneys are character-defining features. So with that, staff does recommend a continuance of this project to address all the concerns you see on the screen. And that is a lot of information, a lot of moving parts of this project. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask. The applicant is here for further clarification if needed.
Staff, do you have any questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Is the petitioner here?
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Joan Leonard again. With Sawyer Design. This one is interesting in that it is, has been stuck between reviewers, to where we started with a previous reviewer and then now are fortunate enough to have a new reviewer. Let me start with main house. The goal is with the main house, we're not touching it. We're not doing anything to it. The paint's going to stay the way that it is. The porches are all going to stay the way that it is. We did request moving the front window to make it more in line with a historic design versus the way that it was built. And that was discussed with the original reviewer, and that did not seem to be a problem. However, if the window needs to stay, we don't have an issue with that. Our main concern really is the back and the back addition. And starting with the back addition, the existing one-story addition that is there, not knowing the time frame of the construction, however, is fairly new, and the structural floor and the foundation and the walls are all serviceable. So our goal is to leave as much of that intact as possible. And if we look at the sort of the site plan and then the back of the elevation, the only part of the elevation that we're removing, there is a faux electric fireplace that's on the back that we would like to remove. And actually that's where our new wall is in line with that existing wall. And the same thing as we go up onto the second level, all aligns with all of that existing construction. We do have a variance request that we're looking at, which is primarily on that far. Let's see, if we're looking at the front of the house, the right side, to where we are. We're about 9 inches off of the existing property line. Basically, because we would like to go ahead and extend our existing addition up from the existing first level. The porch is the only part that is new on the back that would add to a lot coverage and modify some of the back, but it is taking the place of where the existing deck is already in place. We don't have any lot coverage issues. We're all within those guidelines and everything else. But I figured I'd like to take advantage of the time in front of you guys to go through questions before we figure out if we should continue or modify. One more thing I'd like to point out. We do not have an issue if we would have to drop the roof in the back, 12 inches, 18 inches. Would not have an issue with that. I think that still meets the owner's view and still makes everything serviceable on the new second floor without wrecking the overall ceiling height, since the ceiling heights on the second floor are rather large to begin with. With that, anybody have any questions? I'd be happy to answer them.
Kathy Levina, what about the condition of the fireplace and the chimneys?
Oh, fireplace, yes. We are planning on going and reviewing. We haven't been on the roof yet to go see, but they will be cleaned up and left in place, and then the interior will figure out what stays, what goes. But our intent is to leave the existing visual element of the fireplaces or chimneys in place. And if we need to add a note to the drawings, we certainly can do that.
Thank you.
Scott Crotcher, so I understand the variance. So the house itself would have had to have a variance as it is because you're just continuing that wall down.
Right. The existing back addition is already within the setback lines. And we're not touching any of that. We're basically just taking that shed roof off of the back, putting a new floor system in, and then coming up and continuing that sidewall. So really, and that's why if you look at the side, that's why the variance really is the top and the side where the porch is, not the bottom area where the existing addition is. So that's why it's kind of a little wonky on how do we even describe what the variance should be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for board members?
Kathy Levina, so the porch that is being added, the 5-foot
yes.
porch, correct?
Yes.
Would actually comply with the variance. The new addition is going to comply with the variance, the 3-foot variance.
Yes, that is correct. Yes, yes.
So it'll be set back
from
the No. We wanted to continue that line all the way through. So yes, it would be part of that variance ask. It's set with flush with the side of the house, not inset into the
I understand.
Three.
Yeah, so okay. What you're doing is creating a new addition on top, adjacent to the existing addition.
Right.
And you're keeping it in line within the variance versus complying with the 3-foot variance.
Correct.
Yeah, I was going to ask to see the flank here.
Can you guys see that side elevation that was just brought up? So yeah, where the double windows are at the bottom, all that stuff is all intact. That is where the existing shed roof addition is. So really it's the upper area that we're adding. And then because of the fire rating rules, I have to make that wall solid. I can't, in a perfect world, I'd love just to have a column there and some railings, but the city won't let us do that. So that's the reason why I have to do a solid wall there to make all that stuff work. Even if we set it back into the 3-foot line, I still would have to make it a solid wall. I would have to go all the way to the 5-foot setback before I could do a column and then railings and stuff all the way around.
Any other questions, board members? John, while I certainly can't speak for the board, but in the event that we would like to see this continued, are you receptive to that if the board
absolutely,
decides?
Yeah. That's what I mean. I want to take advantage of the time in front of everybody, and we just want to make sure we get it right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't have any comment cards from the public, so I will close the public conversation at this time and go into board discussion. Are there any comments of board members? Would somebody like to make a motion?
Yes. Scott Krotzer, I motion to continue. And I have to say the date. Is that correct?
The dates are in, yes.
Okay. So when is the next?
And we're saying 90 days just in case he can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
90 days, ma'am. Yeah. That's October. Wow.
And okay. if he would like, he can come back prior to that. That just gives a little further okay. out if he can't get the plans done in time.
We should just do the next meeting. I have to think. Well, I don't want to delay this guy 90 days.
Boy, she's saying that he can't. Up until October 22nd.
Yeah, so if he didn't get stuff to us in time, he can come back next month. The 90th okay. day just allows for a little bit extra time in case he can't.
Okay, great.
Okay, Scott Krotzer, I move, I make a motion to continue to October 22nd meeting, the petition of Sawyer Design 25-003138-COA 513 East Henry Street with the staff recommendations 1 through 12.
Second.
Katrina Horner, I second.
Okay, motion proffered and second. I'd like to go to a vote. Let's start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Lipina, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Nantriga, approve. We will continue this item. Next item on the agenda is the petition of Martin and Catherine Pantic. Oh, thank you. Pantic, 25-003309 COA 525. East Anderson Street, new construction, accessory building.
Good afternoon, and this is Kelly. The applicant is requesting approval for construction of an accessory dwelling unit and for selective rehabilitation work at 525 East Anderson Street. The photos you see on the screen are the site's kind of current conditions and what they look like if you drove by right now. So the property has undergone some select changes over time. The main home was constructed in 1898. Between 1898 and 1916, a one-story parcel with porch was added. This was changed to a full with porch sometime between 1966 and 2005. Also in 2010, this rear addition was constructed or was approved, probably constructed not too long thereafter. This addition is very similar to what you see today on the home. So because we know that this portion of the home is newer in construction, we did apply the non-contributing standards to this, as well as to the front porch, since that was altered outside period of significance. But the front half of the house does still have to comply with the contributing building standards. So the applicant's proposing a variety of work on the primary structure. On the front facade, the applicant intends to add shutters all to the front porch at corbels, which will be seen around the entire house, the selective sliding replacement, among other work. On the side elevations, the applicant intends to make selective window changes, which are seen on the more recent addition, and to repair the foundation, which is partially seen throughout the house as well, among other work. On the rear, the applicant proposes to make changes to existing openings to add a rear covered porch and to enclose an existing rear porch type element. The applicant is also proposing to install a fence around the property. So there are some details on the main house that need to be addressed or flushed out. The proposed corbels were initially an area of discussion as part of this application. The applicant did provide some supplemental information this morning and indicate that the photo in the staff report does show the corbels in place at the time. That photo is undated, but it does show that they did exist at one point in time. Also, as a note, that the neighboring property has a similar design and also has the corbels. If the applicant wants more information, more verifiable information on whether or not these existed, they can ask the applicant for that. The applicant is also proposing to enclose this kind of what's now currently a recessed porch. Again, this is on the rear addition that was constructed in 2010, so staff has no concerns about that. The applicant should indicate what siding will be used on the enclosed portion, because there is, I believe it's noted as both a fiber cement board and a composite on the ADU. So we just want clarification if the same material will be used on the enclosure. If it is a composite material, we request that a sample be provided because it's engineered wood, and that has not been something that staff has approved previously or the board has reviewed previously. And finally, with this rear porch type element, the pitch of the roof is at 1/4-12. We suggest that be raised to 2/12 to meet the standards. The staff's also asking that we see that what material is being proposed. They're proposing a polycarbonate, which has never been reviewed as a roofing material. So we just want to see kind of what that looks like for additional review. So along with that, the applicant is proposing an accessory dwelling unit at the rear of the property. Overall, the majority of the work meets the standards. There are just two areas of concern with this design. One is the flat roof. As always, staff did kind of survey the immediate area. There were a number of non-contributing commercial buildings as well as two non-contributing residential buildings with a flat roof. But the only contributing building that staff could find with a flat roof is the Carnby Library, which is a different kind of use in different form. So staff was requesting that more compatible roof form be added or installed. Also, during a site visit, staff found that at least a portion of this ADU will be visible from the primary street, predominantly the interior side, the house basin side, and one of the side elevations. We just asked that if the first floor is visible from the primary street, that the proper window openings be added to those elevations. Also, as a note, fence is being added, so it may be obscured. We're just asking for clarification on that as well. A couple other small things. The applicant should confirm the siding material on this ADU as well, because both fiber cement board and a composite material is being shown, so we see clarification which one's been used. Again, the composite has not been reviewed, so we see a sample of that. There are a couple other minor details that need to be addressed that the applicant will present in their presentation. But with that, staff is recommending continuance of this request to address the conditions seen on the screen. Again, the applicant is here, and they also have a presentation to hopefully clarify some of this stuff as well. So with that, does the commission have any questions for staff at this time?
Kathy Levine, I've got a question concerning the tabby stucco. Is that a finish that you see in the Victorian district?
I cannot think of any particular examples at this time, but staff saw it's just stucco, so we thought it was appropriate in this case.
Any other questions for board members? Okay, let's hear from the applicant, please. Thank you, Kelly.
Just one moment.
Hello, it's Catherine and Martin Pantic, 525 East Anderson Street. I am not a professional. I'm just here in a note-taking capacity, so I'll turn it over to Martin. But I just wanted to say thank you to Caitlin and Kelly. Y'all are super overwhelmed, I'm sure, with all these applications, and we appreciate your hard work, and to the commission. And I'm super excited to now call Savannah home, which is my mother's home. We're finally here and being to take part in reviving and restoring part of the historic district. That's it. I'll leave it to you. I'm going to take my notes.
Hello. My name is Martin Pantic, and I'm the owner and designer. And I wanted to address some of the concerns that the staff had. I would like to go point by point where obviously the first one was the utilization of the flat roof on the accessory building and its compatibility with the adjacencies or in the historic district as a whole. My choice for flat roof was multifold. One, I felt like flat roof design approach is aligns with the district guidelines. And then it also has practical and aesthetic benefits. The visual compatibility considers the rhythm, scale, materials, and setbacks. Flat roof on a carriage house behind the main house has the ability to sort of insinuate the subordinate role that the carriage house has to the main principal building. And sort of removes the focus from the addition and from the carriage house. The flat roof also provides a modern contrast to the historic principal structure. I feel like we construct homes or design structures to the time in which we live in, and I felt that the pitched roof would maybe compete, or there would be too little contrast between the principal building and the carriage house. They are certainly ideas and principles that we carry from the principal building onto the carriage house, whether it's the use of horizontal siding or some of the protrusions for the decks and overhangs. There is, so I talked to the material continuity, and I also believe there are some environmental advantages. The TPO membrane being white has the ability to absorb less heat. And then there are other considerations, the constructability, the flat roof certainly has the less resource, impact. I wanted to show these images where Savannah architecture purely viewed from a street perspective and with its shallow roofs is viewed as a sort of a square facade. I've just randomly picked out few examples, and it is evident that the square is how we perceive the facade, how we perceive majority of Savannah architecture. And I felt that the carriage house sort of addresses the history from that angle as well. There are maybe not exactly contributing structures that have flat roofs, but there are certainly creative ways of implementing flat situations. This is a structure on Anderson Street. They turned what would be a flat roof deck into a livable space. This on the right is a carriage house that's few houses from ours, and from a purely pedestrian perspective, it does have qualities of a flat, partially flat roof. So that would be the answer or sort of the address of the flat roof decision on our carriage house proposal. I know Kelly's addressed the existence of corbels. This is our house going back to, it's undated, so we don't really know, but corbels are present here. The idea of increased pitch on a rear porch roof. Well, one, I wanted to say that we're not necessarily proposing a porch in its traditional sense. It isn't on the rear of the property, so it wouldn't be visible from the main right away, but we're thinking more along the way of a trellis pergola type enclosure where there's going to be still daylight, controlled daylight coming through. I included these images more as an experiential image, what our rear porch would look like. Again, no visual from the street, either from the alley or from East Anderson. There would be minimal impact or disruption to the existing skin of the principal building. The 5V crimp carbonate panel is a clear panel, and if you are familiar, the sample is en route. I'm supposed to have it tomorrow. There was a confusion about the expediency of the sample. But if you can visualize a 5V crimp metal panel that's used around Savannah quite a bit, the clear panel is basically the same thing, except it's clear and it would sit on top of a wooden structure and basically be non-perceptible. Confirm some of the materials on the proposed siding on the porch columns. The siding that's currently it's a multi-tier project because the front facade over our house is original, has the wood siding, lap siding. The other three sides have been redone and currently hold a smooth hardy board type siding. On the rear of the principal building, we would go back with the hardy board siding. On the ADU, I'm proposing, and I have samples with me, it's an LP smart site product. It's designed similarly to a hardy board. It's just a different composition, but it's a long, it's a well-designed product. One of the reasons it's easier to deal with, it's easier to install. It's going to be installed over a rain screen, so longevity is not an issue. And it comes in longer lengths, so presumably fewer seams on any given facade of the ADU. Material information for the door trim, water table trim, trim under the corbels, decking for the porch, and the decking for the porch and accessory building, and the lighting. That was another question. Since we are dealing with rehabilitation of the primary building, the historic portion, which also has the addition, there are some overlaps as to the conforming versus non-conforming, but we would like to construct water table out of wood materials that would wrap the contributing structure. We also are proposing to rebuild some of the window trim, which is deteriorated in some areas, but we have a pretty good idea. I think in the original package, there's the sort of a detail drawing as to what we make the interpretation of what that trim used to be. And the addition, the carriage house would then carry trim pieces that are of the LP product. And the decking material on the carriage house would be the 5/4 by 6 pressure treated deck board fastened with stainless steel screws. Here I'm just showing an image with the ghost lines of the previous corbels. There is a one side has a suggestion. I haven't been able to get a detailed image of what that piece is. This architrave band that seems original. I don't know the profile of it, but I would hope to continue it because it is a band that serves as a suggestion for a support for the wooden corbels. The additional information regarding the lighting, these are sort of a, this is for the ADU. It's a modern lantern, size of 20 inches high and a steel and glass. There was a question about repurposed window. During the 2010 edition, a double window was applied on the second floor in the primary bedroom and primary bathroom with a awkward transom. We would hope to go back to more of a single window composition that would, that's sort of prevalent for a home of, historically prevalent on this home. So I'm just removing one of the twin windows and maintaining the other. So that, I hope that answers that question. And then provide information about the proposed front gate and confirm the neighbor is aware of the proposed gate. We don't have a, there's a chain link fence between us and the adjacent 523 East Anderson. And an image is included on the initial packet. It's not very pretty. And so we, in conjunction with our neighbor, agreed to swap that for a nice wrought iron period appropriate gate. And I'm providing some sample images what that would look like. The support of our next door neighbor email is included. And let's see, this is the add windows to the first floor of the, okay. So this talks to the, Kelly raised the point about whether some of the window, if we have to add, if we should add windows to the first floor of the addition. And I have reviewed some of those images from the previous package from the application. And I see that the 8-foot fence would prevent any view to the first floor of the ADU. I think that I have addressed all the concerns. Any additional questions?
Katrina Hornung. Going back to the flat roof, I don't necessarily have an issue with the flat roof, although I am curious why you are choosing to propose a TPO as opposed to a PVC, which typically has a more longer, you know, lifespan.
Well, as a general contractor, I have had very good experience with TPO. It is white in color, so it does also have some environmental advantages. While I'm not familiar with PVC, I'm just purely going by what my previous experiences.
Just curious. Thank you.
Any other questions from board members?
Captain Levina, do you have, can you scroll back to the image of the house with the corbels?
Yep.
I guess my concern, of course, is the decorative bracket that is shown as your selection. It's not a solid bracket. It's I don't know what you would call it. It, you know, the center is cored out.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, and Kelly, maybe you can help me with this. As far as that design of the corbels, is that appropriate, or would you typically see a solid corbel, especially with the house?
I'll need to do a little bit more kind of diving into what's common in the area. Mm-hmm. But staff originally didn't have too many concerns, but we're also waiting to see if there was evidence to the house having corbels. So staff is a little less in this case on that. But I think staff would be okay with that design if the board feels that it's appropriate.
The board feels that it's appropriate. All right. Thank you.
There are designs through the neighborhood that would show either carved out, more elaborate. And the one we chose for the home seemed sort of more on a simpler side to go more with this, with the overall feel of this historic buildings. There are more elaborate corbels available, but we didn't feel like that would be appropriate for this structure.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. At this time, we will close it and go into board discussion. Anybody have any comments?
Was there any public comment for this project?
No, I don't see any cards. So I don't think we had any this month. Hearing no discussion.
Kathy Levina has a discussion. I just didn't know. I was wondering.
Yes, well,
other people. Sorry. I have some concerns. One of my concerns is the tabby stucco. I have no problem with the use of just a plain flat stucco, but I think with the addition of the tabby shells, you're looking at more of a nostalgic traditional appeal, but it's probably very unlikely that a tabby stucco was used in Savannah's Victorian district. I have concerns over the turn balusters. It's a very simple craftsman style house, especially if you look back at the historic photograph. You wouldn't see turned balusters decoration on a craftsman style house. And if the wood railing were to be reinstalled, I don't believe that the baluster should be turned. I think they should just be a straight 2-inch, true 2-inch baluster. The size of the columns, you can see right there, I think the columns have been shortened. I don't know. And then my concern with the ADU is that it puts the most prominent facade to the lane versus the interior private space of the yard. I think if you would just essentially turn the second floor around so that balcony and the large walkout windows were fronting the main house, it would create a better relationship between the two buildings. The louvered garage doors, I have not seen anywhere. To me, it looks more like a breezeway than a garage door, but that's here nor there. I could leave that. And then the projection of the gate in front of the carriage house has me concerned. I feel that the gate, again, keeping with traditional, historic patterns, needs to be recessed behind the plane of the lane on the ADU. The flat roof, this doesn't bother me.
Any other comments?
Courtney Bonnie, I think with a lot of this, I'm going to agree on staff, especially with maintaining the standards. You know, I appreciate the petitioner showing other examples of roofs. All of the roofs that were shown in there are ones that if you had turned to the side, all are pitched roofs. None of them are actually flat roofs. So I feel like you can still achieve the look that you're going for while still maintaining the standard. So I think that's something that needs to be addressed so that it's falling in line with what's set up within the design guidelines.
Do we have any other comments from board members? Okay. At this time, I'd like to have some sort of a motion.
Kathy Ledbina, I move that we continue the petition to October, no later than 90 days, October 22nd, 2025. Continue the petition of Martin and Catherine Pantic, New Construction Accessory Buildings, Part 1 and 2, and Rehabilitation and Alterations to address staff concerns 1 through 9, as well as a reconsideration of the balcony on the Anderson Lane side of the carriage house.
Do you have a second?
Courtney Bonney, second.
Thank you. Got a motion duly seconded. Let's go for a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Ledbina, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Patrico, approve. Motion carries, and we hope to see you back shortly. On to the next agenda item, we're going to go to the petition of Eco-Friendly Construction and Consulting, 25-003100, COA 506, West 40th Street, Rehabilitation.
This is Kelly again. The applicant is requesting approval of rehabilitation work on the accessory building at 506 West 40th Street. So as noted in the staff report, this ADU accessory building, how they want to reference it, is listed as a contributing building per that map. But based on staff research, it was likely built outside the period of significance. It is not shown on the 1916 Sanborn map or on the cadastral survey, which was done in 1936. The period of significance for this district ends in 1937, but then you do see it in the 1950 Sanborn map, so it is older, but likely built outside the period of significance. So given that information, staff utilize a non-contributing building standards for this project. The applicant is proposing a variety of work to include roof replacement, siding replacement. The current siding is covered asphalt shingles. They want to use hardy board, as well as window replacement and selective window alterations, predominantly on the first floor elevations of the structure. Overall, staff finds that the work meets the standards. There are just two minor notes that staff wanted to call out. One is that the applicant should provide the window material information just to confirm that it meets the standards. The second has to do with these kind of smaller windows on the first floor. They appear to be this kind of horizontal sliding windows, which is not something you commonly see. For these two elevations, they will not be visible from the street, and there's no lane behind the property, so staff will not review in this case. Staff is predominantly concerned with this one side elevation and this one window. It's unclear if this is visible from the street, so staff would recommend that if it is, it be converted to a more compatible window design instead of the horizontal sliding window. So with that, staff does approve the rehabilitation work of the existing accessory building at 506 West 40th Street with the conditions that you see on the screen. With that, does the commission have any questions or concerns?
Courtney Bonney, we talked about this a little bit in the pre-meeting. I think my concern with this one is that the structure was evaluated using the non-contributing standards. So I kind of feel like part of the either it needs to be reevaluated because it is still considered a continuing or a contributing structure. So this is more of a strictly a procedural comment that either it needs to be evaluated based on how it's designated currently, or there needs to be some kind of re-evaluation of that standard. So kind of one or the other, just to make sure that we're having consistent evaluations of all of the properties, and that ones that are considered one thing are following all the same rules and all of that. That's not to say that I don't agree with your assessment. This is probably something that just slipped through the cracks and, you know, add it to the list of things that need to get adjusted maybe over time. But for this,
you know, in the moment, that's just kind of my thought on what needs to happen just to maintain consistency.
Thank you. Any other questions of staff? Okay, at this point, can we hear from the petitioner? Thank you, Kelly.
Good afternoon. Andre Gadsden with Eco-Friendly Construction. This is a pretty pretty simple project here. It's just basically just exterior facade as far as the building is a block structure. So I think the only thing we're actually committed to is the window replacement. I think it has existing like a shingle shaped siding, asbestos siding on the on a top elevation of it. And we're proposing on taking that off and actually making that into I think it's hardy siding. And I guess to answer your question too, well, as far as the historical concept for this property here, we're basically not doing anything majorly as far as any kind of exterior structural changes. Everything's maintained. We're using the compliant windows for that district. The doors will be the same thing. I think the shingles, she said that they were going to be, they were replaced before I got involved with this project. So the shingles are already taken care of. So basically the only thing we're basically doing on the outside is the windows, the doors, and the siding.
Any questions from board members? Okay, thank you so much. We don't seem to have any comment cards from members of the public. So at this point, we will close it and go into a board discussion. Anybody have any comments? Kathy?
I was just going to reiterate that it says on the plans it's hardy board wood siding. So that's what they're proposing.
Okay. Okay. Anything else?
Just again, I agree with the staff recommendations. I just think there needs to be a condition included in here that there's some kind of cross check to make sure that what is proposed is also in alignment with the contributing standards.
Okay. Thank you. Would someone like to make a motion?
Katrina Hornung? You want to add?
Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I think we need to add another condition that this is double-checked by staff to make sure there's nothing that I don't anticipate that there is, just, again, as a procedural point.
Against the contributing.
You have to note if it does go contributing, they cannot use a 5% import sliding. It has to be wood. And then we still need to confirm the windows on that thing. And that could impact how we address the window alterations as well. Just a couple of these windows are being altered. So that could greatly impact this project as a whole if it goes contributing.
Okay. I have a question, Pam Miller. How long would it take you to find that out and figure out how to address that?
Well, we already did. So the problem is that this is 1936, 37. The period of significance ends for Kyler Brownsville in 1937. So clearly we can see that the main house is here. There was a garage here. There was nothing at the rear. So we're not saying it's not like an older structure, but there was a survey done in the 90s that says both of those buildings were from 1911, but we know from the maps that back building was not there. And then if, just to show, I don't know if we'll get a good view of it from here. Yeah, you can. I guess you can't really see. Yeah, unfortunately, that is not a good view. We looked at this from the street. We did not want to trespass and get up and take close-up pictures when this first came out. But, you know, we did take a pretty good hard look at this, which is why we came to the conclusions that we did, that this was an oversight as to what, I don't know if we have any other pictures that would help, but
That was kind of how we got to where we are with this.
Right. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that I don't agree with you guys and that you didn't do good research and all of those things. I think the issue here is that what is on the books right now says something different. And this board doesn't have the authority, and you guys don't have the authority to change the way the project is evaluated based on this research without going back and petitioning to make some sort of change. So that's my point. I'm not saying this wasn't well thought out and everything was laid out and that I agree with you, but unless, because this is something that, like, you know, if this happens again down the line and we make one decision today, we're setting up a precedent that really we don't have the authority to do. So that's my concern here is a procedural concern, not a concern about the way that you guys thought through everything and all of those sorts of things. So this is just like a read the fine print thing that sometimes trips us all up that and can be, you know, not as fun to deal with.
Scott Krotzer, what does it take again to change this? So because it's listed on the paperwork as 1911 is the issue, right?
Right.
So what so actually has to happen?
A text amendment to city council. Yeah. That's like, we have a bigger goal of resurveying. You know, this doesn't happen a whole lot, but you know, this is just this is one of those weird outliers, that we were just.
So it's change of material and which windows are being altered exactly?
I believe it is these two bigger ones in the rear. One or both of these, and then one or both of these.
What so a lot currently?
Of there are these smaller type of okay. Majority of them aren't visible, but that can impact it though because if we evaluate as contributing.
Okay. Are there any more questions of staff?
Are the doors existing?
I evaluated them as existing, but it sounds like they may be new doors. And again, if it goes back to contributing, I don't believe there would, so that could be problematic as well.
This is Pam Weber. Can everybody identify themselves before they speak so that the minutes are clear? Thank you.
She's asking that everyone identify themselves before they speak because not only do we have people online, but also for the recordings so that the public can know who is speaking because they can't see you. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any board members that have questions? Okay. Not hearing any. At this point, we'll close public comments and go into board discussion. Is there anybody that would like to add some comments to this?
I agree, Scott Krotzer. I agree with Ms. Bonnie's concerns with the procedure, but I also am really excited that this building is not being torn down, you know, and I don't want the applicant to get discouraged because of a procedural thing, so I don't know how we would handle it effectively. It's a definite point, but how do we?
Yes, in theory, they could always apply for that special exception if you keep it as contributing, but that's also a $1,000 fee tacked onto it. So that's something to consider as well.
Katrina Hornung. So I guess the question is, do we want to look at it as contributing or as non-contributing for this process?
Courtney Bonnie, again, I think the point is that it's not really our decision as to how to evaluate it. It's listed as contributing, and that's the way that it needs to be evaluated unless there is an amendment to the map, which, again, as Caitlin mentioned, that's kind of a goal of the city to go back and update those plans. But for this particular one, I think we, you know, need to add that as a condition that the staff assess to make sure that if there are proposals or things within the petition that aren't meeting the standards of the contributing, that it needs to come back to the board, unfortunately.
Katrina Hornung, so does that mean we need to continue it essentially? Because we can't approve something and then have them go back and.
Yes, it's my opinion that it needs to be continued so that that evaluation can happen.
Jeff Notriga, for clarification, Katrina, what evaluation exactly are we talking about as far as?
Courtney Bonney, the staff looks at the petition using the contributing standards rather than the non-contributing standards.
But Courtney, is this in the contributing district?
Yeah, so it's currently listed as contributing on the contributing building map, but staff found that was likely built outside of the period of significance. So staff put in the non-contributing standards, but it's still listed as contributing building.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Courtney. Board members, what would you like to do?
I think so.
Scott Krotzer, at that point, there could be, if we continue it to uphold the contributing standards, at that point, the applicant can let us know what he can do.
Yeah, so
it can also see what's visible and maybe it's not an issue.
Yeah, so at that point, too, we can also go back and reevaluate to figure out what's visible from the street, because it's not a corner property, but it's visible from that side street. To figure out from there, we can also figure out if a special reception route could be had if the applicant wants to go that route again, but there's also that fee associated, so I don't want to assume anything.
Somebody like to make a motion, please?
All
right, so the applicant wants to speak?
Yes, of course.
Okay. I'm sorry. Andre Gadsden with Eco-Friendly. Yeah, I can also, based on my design too, we're not, just like I said, it's a block building, so there's not much structural and integrity of the building that we're actually going to interrupt. So I can actually leave the, do this construction as contributing, which will be instead of the hardy, we can do wood. Instead of cutting the windows of the size that we can leave the windows existing until we actually get a definite answer on whether or not we can actually make a change or not. So to keep the project moving forward, I can keep everything compliant as far as the current ordinance and in compliance with the regulations as they go.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You don't have a building permit.
No, ma'am.
Well, how is the project going to continue without a building permit?
Well, I need this to get my building permit.
Correct.
That's what I'm saying. I need this to get the building permit. So to move forward, I need.
Katrina Hornet, well, can we bring it to the staff for review? Okay. Is that something that y'all could do then so that they don't have to come back here?
Yeah, as long as you are clear in the conditions, we can definitely approve that staff.
Courtney Bonney, yeah, I have no problem with this being a condition. My point is that however it happens, the project needs to be evaluated under those. And given kind of what we've seen, I don't think there's going to be a lot of conflict here, just something that we need to make sure happens, in my opinion.
That sounds great then. So maybe we can get a motion where we approve it subject to staff going through the details. Somebody like to make that?
Yeah, so
including the doors. Would you like to make that motion, Kathy?
Katrina Hornock, give it a shot. All right. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Eco-Friendly Construction and Consulting 25-003100-COA 506 West 40th Street with the following conditions. Staff conditions 1 and 2, a third condition evaluating the structure as a contributing structure with any implications that may be approved via staff recommendation or via staff approval, and for the door type as well. Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Courtney Bonney, second.
Having a motion proper and second, I would like to call for a vote. Start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Litvina, approve.
Scott Krautzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Patrico, approve. The motion carries. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to go on to the petition of George Van Arnhem, or George Van Arnhem, 25-003024-COA, 716 West 35th Street, rehabilitation and alterations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. The applicant is requesting approval for after the fact and proposed rehabilitation and alteration work for the property at 716 West 38th Street. Per the applicant, the purpose of this project is to preserve and enhance the home's historic character while addressing previous poorly executed modifications and ensuring the property blends with the surrounding neighborhood. The scope of work includes removal of a non-historic front porch enclosure. As you can see, the before and afters here, installation of new 6x6 posts at the porch corners and center, reconstruction of wood railings and balusters, installation of one vinyl window on the front elevation, two proposed window replacements on the rear elevation using matching materials, and installation of new architectural asphalt shingles on the roof. So just a little context, 716 West 38th Street was built in 1916 and is a contributing resource. It is surrounded by several other contributing resources of the same time period, many of which also are two-story wood frame houses. A historically inappropriate front porch enclosure was installed sometime long before there was a historic district ordinance, including vertical siding and aluminum awnings. Interestingly, there is another house two doors down with the same metal awning and above the porch, which may have been installed around the same time. So for the Secretary of the Interior standards, staff found the front facade of the building was already heavily altered. The project seeks to return to a more historically appropriate configuration. Staff research did not uncover any historic photographs of the building to determine whether there had been wood posts and railings on the porch originally, or if it had been concrete and breeze block configurations like what is seen on the nearby homes of similar design, which could have also been later changes. There are many houses within this area, though, that do have wooden railings and porch columns. Then it would not be a false sense of historical development to use the surrounding historic context to place back a style that was seen on wood frame houses of this time. The inappropriate porch enclosure from the mid to late 20th century has not acquired historic significance in its own right. There was a hidden window on the front elevation of the house, which was concealed by this porch. The applicant noted it was removed and replaced with a vinyl window. This is a prohibited material. There's also a note that two windows on the rear elevation are either proposed or already have been replaced, but there are no pictures of the rear elevation. Staff requests this information. And regarding the openings, it appears the windows are in their original location and remained intact when the enclosure happened. But for the doors, staff just has a condition to also provide information on whether the original door was still there. It looks like the transom and frame are still in place, but just to confirm whether that's the same door was still there or if a new one was added and what that is made of. So with that, staff recommends to approve the after the fact and proposed rehabilitation and alterations for the property at 716 West 38th Street with the following conditions to be provided to staff for review and approval prior to continuing the work. One, for the windows, replace a vinyl window on the front elevation with a historically appropriate wood window in the same configuration as the original and provide information about the two proposed window replacements on the rear, including photographs of existing windows and replacement product specifications, to provide information about whether the door was still intact or if it was replaced, and if replaced, provide the product specifications for staff review, and add a cap to the porch columns to reflect a historically accurate style. I forgot to mention that part, but that is
You know, the base is there, but the cap is not. So that was just our recommendation. Does anybody have any questions?
Okay, hearing no questions from staff, let's go to the petitioner.
Good afternoon. I'm James Lee. This is Mr. Rico. We are superintendents of this project. We do have a couple concerns. Only starting with the windows, the enclosed porch didn't have a existing window. So we actually brought it back to the historical style is what we was attempting to do. The window that we do have at this particular time is consistent with the other windows in the house. The windows that are in there are not wooden windows. They are plastic frame windows throughout the existing house. So we went back with the exact same style, storm window on the very front to continue the look. So with the windows that we replaced, we're asking that they are the continuum of the existing windows. The porch and the front door, there was no front door. So we made a decision to, and we can always change that. The front door, we did put a metal door that was in a high crime area, so there was constant break-ins as we was working on the project. So the window, that the door that we put on was a metal front door. For safety reasons. So if we have to go back and change that, we have no problem with that.
Columns?
And the columns, we've got
Ariel Mardias. We do have updated pictures based on the pictures that was shown to you guys. And it does show where the upper cap of the columns are in now in place.
And such. Yep. And the before and after the one.
Yeah, this is the window upstairs.
I'm gonna give it to
him. I can pass this around too. Is this everything?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah.
We kept the look the exact same, the framing around the window to reflect the historical look.
The trim out, the exterior trim out of the window.
Did anyone have any other questions for the petitioners?
Okay. Hearing no other questions, we have no public comments, so we'll close it and go into board discussion. Does anybody have anything to say about this?
Scott Krotzer, just judging from the surrounding context of the other houses which appear to match. The one that's next door to it, to its right, has a giant picture window in that spot with diamond panes above. If you go to the Google view, you can, or sorry, Google Earth, I saw it. So I don't think the proportion of the front window is correct. Yeah, if you go back where you were and then turn and look, you can see it right there. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I have concerns with the front door.
Capula Vina, I agree with Scott as to the window proportion, and I agree with staff on not continuing or upholding the ordinance and not allowing the use of vinyl windows, especially not on the front facade. And then the front door, again, needs to comply with the ordinance.
The upper.
Oh, it's closed for the public comment. Oh. Yeah, they won't.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, at this point, are there any other comments from board members?
Working together on this.
All right, can I get a motion?
Okay. Need a motion now, I'm assuming. Scott Krotzer, I make a motion. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of, sorry, my computer went down. Oh yeah, 716 West 38th Street, 25-003024 COA, with the conditions suggested by staff, adding historically accurate front door and a historically accurate window with proportional size to what the opening actually was. Yeah, I said door.
Okay, do we have a second?
Courtney Bonnie, second.
Okay, having a motion second, and let's go to a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonnie, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horner, approve.
Jeff Notrika, approve. Motion carries. Let's go on to another petition of Eco-Friendly Construction Design, Andre Gadson, 25-002578 COA, 2407 Haversham Street, new construction, parts 1 and 2.
All right, thank you. This is Caitlin again. So the applicant's requesting approval to construct a multifamily residential house on the vacant lot located at 2407 Haversham Street. So a little project history. This was first heard at the June 25th meeting. HPC members had some concerns about the visual compatibility of the overall design and continued this to the July 23rd meeting. So the conditions was to provide product information for the rectangular accent and transom windows. This information has now been provided. The accent windows are the Anderson 400 series awning windows, and the transom windows are part of the mahogany single front door unit with transom from Lang Building Supply. The second condition was to adjust the first floor height to meet the 11 feet minimum. So we'll see from the previous design, this was just under 11 feet. They have now revised it to be exactly 11 feet. Provide information whether the wood porch elements will be painted or stained. So that on the drawings, it is now noted that the wood porch elements will be painted. The fourth condition was to contact the city traffic engineering department to determine whether it will be possible to add a curb cut in the proposed driveway location. If this is permitted, staff also recommends that the driveway installed as a ribbon strip to meet the standard. So the applicant provided the conditional approval letter from the city's traffic engineering department. A ribbon strip driveway is now shown on the site plan that they provided, but just to show, you know, this is conditionally approved for that curb cut and then driveway at the rear. And the site plan here now shows that. And then the fifth condition was to reconsider the visual compatibility of the overall design. The applicant took the commission's comments from last meeting into consideration and revised the staircase by moving that to the rear. So this is how it was originally presented. Now this is going to be on the rear configuration here, so you're not seeing this from the front elevation. The symmetry of the doors and windows on the rear elevation now also read as more visually compatible than the previous design as well. So with that, just to kind of take a closer look, so this is all the proposed information. And due to the previous staff recommendation where at the time we also recommended approval, with these changes that have taken place, this recommendation remains to improve the construction of a multifamily house on the vacant lot located at 2407 Haversham Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Do you have any questions for board members? Okay, hearing none, can we hear from the applicant? Thank you, Caitlin.
Andre Gatson, Eco-Friendly Construction. This is a multifamily new construction project that we're proposing on building here on Haversham Street. This would be probably one of the first time I ever built a this will be a modular house, so this is kind of new for me too. I probably have done probably upwards of over 100 plus projects in the historic district, but never have done a modular before. So this is a new lane for us too at the same time. But I think as far as everything that's visual, I think we're very compatible compared to what we have to do here as far as the compliance.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions from board members?
Levina, can you please define modular house?
It's a modular, which will be, it will be constructed not completely on site. It will be actually brought in and set on the foundation.
Designed, like to build, like you design it, they build it, then you bring it in?
The original design was their design. I modified it to make it work to be compliant with the historic compliance. So I had to modify a little, tweak it a little bit to make it work. But based on my design, yeah, it's going to be compatible for the historic district.
Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Let's close this to public and go into board discussion. Kathy.
Kathy Levina, I have some concerns with that second floor fenestration pattern, most specifically with the doors, with the transoms above. The design doesn't have that rhythm that you typically see with solids to voids on the streetscape. The window on the left-hand facade obviously is pushed over in order to accommodate the stair going up, and that contributes to the uneven second-story facade. My thought is if you were to eliminate the doors for a three-sash window that opens up to that second-floor porch, you would obscure, I think, some of the uneven facade, the fenestration pattern. My thought.
Any other comments? Okay. Board members, can somebody give me a motion?
Katrina Hornung.
I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Eco-Friendly Construction and Design 2500-2578 COA 2407 Haversham Street as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Courtney Bonney, second.
Thank you. Having a motion seconded. Let's go to a vote. Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levina, deny.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Dunfrick, approve. Motion carries. Thank you. Next item is the petition of Savannah Wood Fence LLC 25-003313 COA 128 East 39th Street Rehabilitation and Alteration.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation and alterations on the property located at 128 East 39th Street. The scope of work includes rehabilitation of the second story porch on the front elevation, reconstruction of the second story porch on the rear elevation, including the addition of a porch roof and screening. The work on the rear porch was in progress before the COA was applied for, so this is a partial after the fact situation, but the work is halted. The scope of work also includes in-kind siding replacement only in areas where the wood is rotted beyond repair. The applicant noted that this will be carefully removed and replaced in kind with wood siding, but it's not close to a wholesale replacement. So this was 128 East 39th Street was built in 1900 and is obviously a contributing resource. It's part of a duplex that also includes 130 East 39th Street and sits on the corner lot of East 39th and Abercorn Streets. The front and side elevations have wraparound porches and the rear has a small porch on the second floor. All of these are visible from the public rights of way. So with regard to the Secretary of the Interior Standards, the project seeks to make alterations that are repairing issues with the porch railings on the second story of all elevations. The proposed roof addition to the rear porch is a minimal alteration, which would not interfere with the character-defining features of the entire building. The only proposed change truly is the roof addition to the rear porch. The submitted design shows how this will be subordinate and will meet the conditions for additions. The applicant stated the porch roof will be lower than the roof line. So though we were given this information and just by what we can look at, we can see how it most likely would be subordinate, but staff did request an elevation drawing that would show how the porch relates to the roof line, ensuring it clearly reads as a later addition rather than tying into the existing roof to ensure it meets the standards. And one thing I will note is that even after the time that this report has been written, this is one of those cases where we've been having ongoing conversations with the applicant who's been very responsive. So some of this information you will see presented by them today, addressing some of the conditions, but just wanted to make a note of that. But as at the time it was written, this is what will be presented. The applicant plans to make only in-kind siding replacements where repair is not possible. The damaged siding will be carefully cut away and the replacement wood will go in as an exact match. For the deteriorated wood on the porches, the railings, columns, and balusters would be replaced in-kind with wood and painted to match the existing. Pictures of the affected areas were included with the application. There is a plan to return the removed railings and posts to the rear porch. The applicant noted that the decking on the rear porch had deteriorated to the point where it was a safety hazard. Once the decking was removed, it was discovered that the vast majority of the framing was rotted beyond repair as well. So one thing staff would recommend is that the railings were, which appears still be, at least not sure when this picture was taken, but appears that they could be in good shape so that they would be placed back after this stabilization work is completed. Just a quick note, too, that the applicant proposes to use Trex decking on the floors of the second-story porches only. This is a composite material made of recycled plastics and sawdust. Staff was able to field verify that the second story porch floors would not be visible from the street level. We went out there and stood from a few different angles. And it's interestingly, it's boxed in a way that even underneath you're not seeing the decking. So that is considered not visible from the right of way. However, we would not approve this for the first story, but that is not being proposed. The small roof addition to the rear second story porch, this is for the additions category, will not destroy historic materials that characterize the property so long as it does not tie into the existing roof. This could be removed in the future, and the essential form and integrity of the historic property would not negatively be affected, nor would it cause irreversible damage. The porch roof line should be subordinate to the existing roof line on the house. So, let's go back. For projection standards, the majority of the work is in-kind repairs where needed, which will not affect the existing projections. However, the roof addition will change the look of the rear porch. Based on the drawing of the proposed roof, it seems like it would be subordinate to the existing roof line and clearly in addition. And it's on a small scale, which would help remain visually compatible. Staff found material-wise, much of this is in-kind repair work that would be compatible with this. And then they provided the paint colors, but since we're not reviewing that, that is not part of our review. So with this case, staff recommends to approve the rehabilitation alterations and porch roof addition requests with the following conditions, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, provide product specs and images for the proposed aluminum track screen system for the porch to screen it in and the roof shingles. Staff did also notice in the in Google Street View, it was a shingle roof that was replaced to shingle roof, so it wasn't like a metal one was taken away. Provide a rear elevation drawing that confirms the proposed porch roof and screening installation meets the standards. And provide information about the removed railings and posts if they were salvaged and are in good condition. Reuse them after the framing has been repaired. If they are not, ensure the replacement material reflects the original porch configuration. Thank you.
Do any board members have questions for staff? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Caitlin. Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
Come up to the podium, please. Yeah.
Hello. James Gavin, Savannah with Fence.
I'm going to pull up your extra info, too.
Okie doke. Great. So yeah, this project's pretty straightforward. You know, we had submitted for the building permit. That's when they deferred us to, you know, the HPC to get this approved, so that we can get our permit to build the roof for this rear porch. You guys have any questions?
Kathy Libana, are you using the existing railing?
We are salvaging the existing railing, correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions, board members? Okay. We're good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
We have no public comment card submitted, so we will close this to go into board discussion. Board members, is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Can I get a motion?
Scott Krotzler, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Savannah Wood Fence LLC Rehabilitation and Alterations 128 East 39th Street 25-003313 COA as submitted with staff recommendations 1-3 because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Katrina Hornung, I second.
Okay, having a motion and properly seconded, let's go for a vote. We're going to start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonnie, approve.
Ann Miller, approve. Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Approve. Motion carries. Thank you. Next one, we'll go to the petition of Maxwell Erickson, 25-002776 COA 101 East 34th Street, new construction parts, small parts 1 and 2, and special exception request.
Good afternoon. This is Kelly. So again, the applicant is requesting approval for new construction small parts 1 and 2 for a two-story accessory dwelling unit and approval for two special exception requests. So this building is two stories tall and overall height of 21.5 feet. The building is unique in that there's not a lot of Mediterranean-style buildings in the immediate context, and this building will have a lot of the characteristic features of that style, to include the stucco and the terracotta tile roof. While unique, the primary structure, has a similar design, which makes design for the accessory building appropriate. Overall, the building meets the standards and the zoning requirements, with the exception of two areas, which is why the applicant had to submit two special exception requests. The first is for the size of the garage doors. Under the ordinance, garage doors can be no wider than 12 feet. The applicant is applying for a 16-foot single garage door. Staff finds that the special exception criteria are met in this case, given that requiring two garage doors to obtain that 16-foot size will result in a garage having a larger width and size, which could be out of context with the overall immediate context. The second special exception request is for the side setback. Typically, setbacks are referenced in terms of variances, but it's kind of a unique case. The property was recently rezoned by City Council to TC1. In TC1, you can have no interior side setbacks if it's abutting another TC district, which in this case it is. The applicant is proposing a 12-inch side setback, so technically it meets the zoning requirements, but under the ordinance for this district, accessory dwelling units need to have a minimum of 3-foot side setback. So in this case, the applicant can apply for a special exception from this board, since the board can grant setbacks that are 1 to 2 feet into that side setback. In this case, staff recommends approval of the site setback, as the applicant is working with existing site conditions that were not created by the applicant or the property owner. The building is also modest in scale and is not trying to maximize what they're allowed under the zoning and site ordinance. So with that, staff does recommend approval of the new construction small parts 1 and 2 for the accessory dwelling unit, as well as approval for those two special exception requests. With that, does the commission have any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? We have none. Thank you, Kelly. Is the petitioner here?
Applicant is here as well.
Hi there. This is Max Erickson. I'm the petitioner as well, and the property owners are also here, Mary and Steve Peschkel. The circumstances in this situation are a little unique. The reason for the side setback exception request was because the previous property owner, which these property owners recently purchased the property from, had installed a pool in the backyard. And it's kind of a unique lagoon-style pool, and it's pretty compactly fit in that yard. So the only way to fit a carriage house on the property is really to put it in this location. And because the space between the pool coping edge and the property line is so tight, that's why they're requesting to push it a little bit closer to the property line than would be ordinarily by right. Thus, that also is what's yielding the single garage door rather than two, because we're trying to minimize the width of the building to the extent possible.
Thank you. Are there any questions from staff?
Scott Krotzer, is there an abutting carriage house to the property line on the other side? Or?
There is not. We actually have an approval letter from the neighboring property to that they are good with us locating close to their line, because they just use their backyard as a big parking lot.
Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
We don't have any comment cards, so we'll go ahead and close this to board discussions. Do we have any questions or comments?
I just had one other question, Scott Krotzer, Kelly. For Kelly, it's painted brick?
Yes.
Is it actually painted or stained? I'm just curious, because painted brick, as we know, causes more maintenance with the brick not being able to breathe. So I didn't know if it was being stained or
No, typically for newer bricks, it's less of a concern. If it was a historic brick, yes, do not paint it. But we're less concerned with modern brick. But again, you can ask the applicant if you want further clarification.
Is it a special paint that you're putting on the brick?
The brick veneer, right?
Oh, okay. I misread that then. Understood. Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments on the board? Can I get a motion, please?
I'm going to do all of them today. Scott Krotzler, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Maxwell Erickson, New Construction, Small Parts 1 and 2, and special exemption requests for 101 East 34th Street 25-002776-COA with staff recommendation. Oh, wait, you don't have any recommendation. And also to approve the special exemption request from the standards that read garage openings shall not exceed 12 feet in width to allow for a 16-foot wide garage door, and approve the special exemption request for the standard that reads side yard setbacks for new accessory structures shall be a minimum of 3 feet to allow for a 1 foot side setback because the criteria for a special exemptions are met as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Kathy LeBron, a second.
Thank you. Having a motion and a second, I'd like to go and go to vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Ann Miller, approve. Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Jeff Natrika, approve. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Now we'd like to go on to the petition of Dean Architecture and Design, LLC, Fred Dean, 25-002217, COA, 423 West 42nd Street. Addition and after the fact rehabilitation alterations.
So this is Kelly again. Again, the applicant is requesting approval for a rear addition, for rehabilitation work, and for after the fact rehab and alteration work. Pretty sure the board is relatively familiar with this project at this point. This has been heard at the two previous commission meetings and is coming back again. Again, the applicant is attempting to address some after the fact work and construct addition. At the previous meeting, the board voted to continue the project with select conditions that you see on the screen. So I'm just going to go through each of these real quick, and I'll pull up the plans as proposed in just a second. With regards to the first condition, the applicant has altered the design of the addition, so that is now tucked behind the historic structure and no longer wrapped in the corner, so this condition is met. With regards to the second condition, the applicant is proposing a single door and two windows on that first floor, the front facade. So staff finds that this is visually compatible and meets the standards. The only thing of note is that the plan shows siding on that first floor, which obviously meets the standards, but there's currently that faux brick siding on there currently. The homeowner suggests that maybe they want to keep that faux brick. Staff finds it to be appropriate in this case. We just need confirmation of what exactly they're doing. With the third condition, the applicant has completely removed the driveway and the curb cut, so that condition no longer stands. With the fourth condition, the plans now show the size of the mud to be 1 inch, slightly too big. Should be about 7/8 of an inch, and we do suggest that that be decreased in size. With the fifth condition, staff determined that the handrail on the side ports will not be reviewed because it's going to be hidden behind the proposed fence, so it's out of the public right-of-way, view of the public right-of-way. With the sixth condition, the side porch will have an asphalt shingle roof and a pitch of 412 meeting standards. The applicant will need to continue working on condition 7 as there are no updated plans for the solar panels, so we're unsure if that's met. And with regards to the final condition, alterations were made to the first floor window on that rear portion to make it a single window instead of a paired window, and two windows were added to the top elevation. Staff recommends that the current paired window be retained and then the upper windows mimic what is currently there. So this is the currently proposed design. Again, alterations at first floor. The addition is now tucked behind the main house. And these are the windows I was just referring to. Currently, this is a paired window. So staff recommends that this be retained, that the paired window be retained, and these upper two windows mimic that design. There's one more change that was made that was not discussed just now. And this has to do with the side porch that's currently posed to this element right here. This will see the addition of a door in about right here, as well as alterations of some windows or alteration of a single window into two windows. Staff finds that in this case, this is appropriate because it's beyond midpoint of the house and we partially obscured by a proposed fence when it is constructed. So staff finds overall it meets the standards. With that, staff recommends approval of the proposed work with the conditions that you see on the screen. So with that, does the commission have any questions?
Scott Krotzer, I have one. What is the acceptance or of this double window? What's the thinking behind that? You want it to be delineated as a newer addition so that they don't match?
So you're talking about these two?
Yeah, the ones that you were discussing, because I think it was one of our conditions that they
more
congruent, but you're saying not to do that?
So what kind of our thought process was, it's these windows right this area here. And staff felt that this window is clearly already delineated from these front windows. So just to mimic this one up here, instead of trying to make whole new opening sizes, this one is quasi similar to what's already seen on the house. So we're just saying keep these smaller window, to the smaller window and put it up here. Just because it's already delineated.
Kathy Labina, staff didn't really address the addition of the arched cutouts on the porch.
Because in this case, staff felt like it was kind of an appropriate addition. It wasn't a major alteration. So staff felt like it was appropriate in this case. Of course, if the commission feels otherwise, you can put a condition on there to remove it.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions for staff? Okay, thank you, Kelly.
The applicant is here as well.
Okay, great. Can the applicant like to speak, please? Come up to the podium.
My name is Fred Dean with Dean Architecture and Design. So in order to move this project forward and hopefully get approved, we have addressed the previous comments from the last meeting. First of all, the front elevation, we returned that to what was more historically appropriate. And to confirm, we want to have siding as opposed to the brick. So much has been done to that brick with the other arch doors that to try to replace it, none of it would be historic brick anyway. So the rear, as was pointed out, the rear addition was reduced in size and taken in from the corners to clearly be seen as an addition. And then as far as the windows go, at the rear of the main structure along Martin Luther King, we changed this from the smaller twin windows to what you see because we thought it was more historically correct and visually compatible with the rest of the building. That basically is, in short, what it was. So we're happy to comply with staff's recommendations and conditions other than the windows. We hope you would consider what the current design is. Anyway, we don't want to push it too much because we would like to get this project through. So with that, if you have any questions.
Kathy Levine, I've got a question about the metal pergola. Is it powder coated or is it just bare metal?
No, it's powder coated.
It is powder coated?
Yeah.
Does it have a cover? Is it roofed? Is that where the solar panels are going? I'm just confused about that whole element.
Oh. What it is we want to try to provide a trellis out there for people to sit outside. And it actually is, they're made so where the louvers turn. So when it's not raining, you can get sunlight through. But when it is raining, those louvers turn and it becomes a solid surface. And as you can see, I hope from one of the elevations I had, it basically disappears behind the 8-foot fence.
Great. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Scott Krotzer, I noticed that you are rebuilding the chimneys.
Yes.
And do you have a material specification for that, or what is it being rebuilt out of? Historically accurate material?
Well, it shows brick. I mean, we'll try to make it red brick, basically, to match probably the foundation.
Okay.
Are there any other questions, board members?
Capulet Bynett, do you have issue with removing the inserted arch detailing at the porch?
The owner likes it. I mean, the owner suggested it. He just sees that, you know, he sees similar orientation in other porches in Savannah. So that's why he suggested we drew it. Quite frankly, at this point, he's not going to argue if you decide to remove it. But he would, you know, he genuinely would like to keep it.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the petitioner? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close this to the public as we have no comment cards and go into board discussion. Is there any discussion, Kathy?
Obviously. I have concern about the arched inserts in the porch. I feel that it is a new decorative trim that never existed on that porch, and you really can't support that. It with historical evidence. I think it creates a false sense of history when looking at the Secretary of Interior standards. I think the door with the side lights and transom on the side does the same. It mimics the front porch design. I have no problem with the door on the side. However, it needs to be simplified, maybe with just a transom and with the removal of the side lights, and that would distinguish it from the front porch, and it would distinguish it as being a historic opening. And let me just look. Solar energy, I guess, will be brought back to us. And those are my only concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from board members?
Courtney Bonney, I agree with both of those provisions and the rest of staff recommendations.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
Kathy Lidvina, I move that the Historic Preservation Commission approve the petition of Dean Architecture. Dean Architecture and Design, petition 25-002217-COA, addition and after the fact rehabilitation and alterations with the following conditions, 1 through 4, with the additional condition of 5, the removal of the side lights on the side, I don't remember, but north? No. What facade is that?
It's left elevation. I'm not sure what direction.
Removal of the left, yes. Okay, the removal of the side lights around the door on the left elevation, as well as the removal of the arched inserts, detailed inserts on the porch, the front porch.
Okay.
Because the petition is otherwise in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Courtney Bonney, second.
Thank you. We have a motion and second. I'd like to go to a vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Catherine Ladonna, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Jeff Dontrico, approve. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Let's go on to the petition of 39th Street Development LLC, 25-000936, COA 403 West, 39th Street, contributing demolition, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. Actually, have the next two are kind of a pair. Each of these are in similar situations. They were applied for together. So the applicant is requesting approval to demolish a fire-damaged contributing resource located at 403 West 39th Street. The application also includes plans for new construction of a quadplex on the site if the demolition is approved. 403 West 39th Street was built in 1900 and is a contributing resource within the Thomas Square Streetcar National Register Historic District and Local Streetcar Historic District. It is a one-story residence constructed with brick masonry and with a stucco veneer. It's one of three houses on this block that faces Wells Park. Based on images in the MPC files, the building had sat vacant since at least 2010. So I'm going to show you some images. So the city did a observation after the fire of the site. So here's some of these photos just to show you the current conditions. And then clearly, as you saw from the first image, this they did condemn this property. There was an initial application submitted earlier this year, but more information was needed, including the required plans to rebuild on the lot. There was a lot that we still needed, so this has been ongoing. And then in June, a fire damaged the building. The applicant has since worked with Ethos Preservation to create a new construction plan for the site. They also provided a detailed history of the property within their application packet for new construction. There was a structural engineer's report. There was one done in April, but then another one was done after the fire. So per the structural engineer's report, the subject residence has experienced a recent fire, which has totally destroyed the rear of the structure. Additionally, there were observed instances of what appeared to be prior attempts to reinforce the original masonry foundation. These attempts appeared to be in disrepair and or inadequate, either through poor workmanship or degradation over time. So for a demolition request review, the following standards would apply. So the Historic Preservation Commission will determine that at least one of the criteria below has been satisfied when a contributing resource is proposed for relocation or demolition. So the first one would be relocation or demolition is required to alleviate an immediate threat to public health or public safety. The city has condemned this building as unfit for human habitation. Although there is not a demolition order in place, this has been deemed a nuisance property. Further, the city staff completed a building observation after the structure fire. The report recommends demolition, but notes that a COA and documentation procedures are still to be followed. Two, the relocation or demolition is required to avoid exceptional practical difficulty or undue hardship upon the owner of the property if all the following conditions are also satisfied. So the first would be the applicant has provided evidence sufficient to demonstrate that the application of the standards of this section deprives the applicant of reasonable economic return on the subject property. Photographic evidence of the fire damage shows it could be the case that the applicant would not receive a reasonable economic return on the subject property in its current fire damaged condition. And two, the undue hardship is not of the property owner's making. The undue hardship is not of the property owner's own making. Even before the fire, the building had sat vacant under previous ownership for decades, possibly. For conditions, in granting a COA for relocation or demolition, HPC may impose, in addition to those listed below, reasonable conditions as will mitigate the negative effects of the relocation or demolition. So staff recommends that rather than traditional demolition, the applicant explores whether it is feasible for the building to be deconstructed in the condition it's in and the material salvaged for reuse where possible. Staff also recommends that the applicant documents the building as per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition. In the case of the demolition of a contributing principal building, a COA must first be issued for the new construction of a replacement building prior to the demolition. So in this case, there's the other part of this project to fulfill that requirement. They have provided that information. And then there's a section about demolition due to immediate threat. While a demolition order was not issued, a building observation report from the city recommends demolition as noted previously. So we'll go into, sorry, This is some of the context. So this is what's next door, and then the only other house on this block is right here. And then next to that house is this fenced-in lot. So the site plan, this is showing for both properties. It's going to be the same quadplex proposal on both lots. So I will go through it for this one, and then for the second one, just to save time, I'll go over the demolition statistics for that. But this is, you know, the same thing for both. I'll get to the elevations. So we got, get over to the design. So with regards to the standards, staff found much of this was met. The height, width, and scale of the proposed building meets the standards. If the demolition of both 403 and 407 West 39th Street are approved and the new construction is also approved, there would be one remaining contributing building on this block, which is a two-story wood frame house, as seen and pictured before. This proposed new construction would be visually compatible to this building.
So, Caitlin, is it appropriate to consider these two together?
We'll consider them. Well, they're going to be presented separately as two different lots and two different projects with different file numbers. But if the board is agreeable, I don't need to go into the presentation of this part of it for 407 as well, but you could still approve it. I will just make a mention that we've just reviewed it. But for just 403 for this part of the approval, they would still be approved separately.
But they're basically twins.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. So with that, staff finds that the standards were met, did not really see any red flags or conditions. So the staff recommendation is to approve the request to demolish the contributing building at 403 West 39th Street with the following conditions. Because the demolition criteria are met, if it's feasible, explore whether the building can be deconstructed rather than traditional demolition and the materials salvaged for reuse where possible, and document the building per the City of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings prior to demolition, and approve the request for new construction at the property located at 403 West 39th Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. As a petition, do we have any questions of staff?
Kathy Labina?
Yes.
What is the width of the historic contributing resource, the two-story?
I don't know if we have that information.
And what is the height, obviously?
We can check with the petitioner about if they have that info. I don't know if it's listed. I don't think I noticed it on the site plan, if there was a note. But I believe it was designed to be compatible in height and scale with this, because you can see here's where the lot is. Now, we don't have the footprint, but there's just like a visual of the lot, considering that there's like an actual vacant lot next to that. But we can check with the petitioner.
Just to clarify, you're saying the second story building is adjacent or across the street?
This is right next door. So
right next door.
Yeah, this is one of the, this is 407. So there's just three houses on this block right now because there's a park on the other side. And it's a partially commercial area, so then there's a lot of car auto repair places and such. Did anyone have any other questions, or do you turn it over to the petitioner?
Any questions of staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Can we hear from the petitioner, please?
Hi, I'm Beth McElrath, and I represent the petitioner. And it's been very well stated, so I don't really have any further comments unless you guys have questions. I do work in the area. I'm downtown a lot. I provide property management, and I'm very familiar with this area. And these two homes have been quite derelict and have been inhabited by homeless people. And it's caused problems with the adjacent neighbor in the two-story blue house with human sanitary issues as well as safety issues. So I frequent the area quite often, and it would be highly beneficial to this area for these two homes to be appropriately demoed and new construction to help revitalize the area, to bring, you know, better aesthetics to the community and the neighborhood, as well as to improve the safety concerns.
Kathy Levina, do you have the measurements, the width and the height of the existing?
I heard you ask that, and unfortunately I do not, but we can work through Caitlin to resubmit that.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions of the petitioner? Okay, hearing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close this to public comment, and we'll go into board discussion. Kathy? We have any board
concern with the height and the mass of the building being too large for that, that one, the last remaining contributing building on the block, I guess, being it that it's 30, let's see, the width is 38 foot 10 inch wide. The height is 31, and I think that might be okay. And the depth is 81 feet. And I just worry about the massing of that property overshadowing the historic property.
One comment. There is a similar structure being erected in that area on 38th Street.
You can come back up to the mic. And just say your name again.
Yes.
This is Beth McElrath again. There are similar structures being erected in that area. As I said, I frequent the area quite often for management, and I work directly with owners, but one that I've noticed is on 38th Street, and it would be very similar, if not exactly match that design style, height and width. So it would not be an eyesore in that area. And also across the street from this block, what would that be? MLK, so it would be Montgomery, is also very tall buildings, the Abbey being one, the renovated, I believe it's a high-end condominium. So it would not be something that is unusual in that area. Definitely to go with the flow of that environment.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I don't have a question. I just have a comment with the commission. You know, it's just a shame to lose these two. There's documentation on one in GHS, if you read the packet. And I didn't see anything in the reports that say that they're structurally not able to be fixed. It actually suggests fixing even after the fire. So that's really my only comment. I'm not against development for sure, but I just, you know, I'm a saved person. So if we could, or does it have to be both? I mean, one seems to be in better condition than the other. That's my comment.
Why don't we, why don't we ask the petitioner if there's any?
Yeah, these are two, they're separate ones. Yeah, you would just make two decisions.
Okay.
So.
Which one's in worse shape than the other?
Well, clearly the one that experienced the fire, but the one next to it when the fire was being put out suffered, water damage as well because of. So we'll get to this one, and then we'll just go right into the next one.
So 403, the first one we're talking about is the fire damage one.
Yes, so this is 403.
Okay.
When the fire was being put out, though, the water was going towards 407, and I'll show you that too, where it's gotten worse even in the time since they applied.
Okay. Well, I guess just to go back to these being separate is, I mean, this might be a question for the petitioner, but I mean, are you guys amenable to considering these separately, or is this one of those things where everything needs to get approved?
Well, they are separate.
They're their own addresses, so they're just they each have to be considered as their own
separate.
They're independent of each other because they have different pins and it's a different lot.
All right, so let's
Yeah, and I mean the structural engineer report notes should be completely demolished and rebuilt on the rear, and then just saying framing components of the existing building should be completely demolished and rebuilt, and at that point there's not a lot left.
I'm comfortable that 403 is there's nothing to save.
Well, to my point, 37th Street, the web house that we just got through reviewing last meeting, looked worse than that, you know, by the time it was done. And it had, it definitely didn't say repair piers. It definitely didn't say take down just the rear and rebuild. It was like completely demolish it was the recommendation at that time. And now the house is completely restored and in place. I'm not really arguing for either. I just would like this to be considered. We're going to lose two.
I understand, and I appreciate that. I would also argue we've at least lost one already. That fire damage is certainly, I wouldn't want to take on trying to fix that.
This is Pam Miller. Have we agreed that we're losing the second one? No.
We're just talking about the first one.
Right. No, but I'm just saying. No,
Hornung, is the second one contributing 407?
They're both contributing. And I just wanted to note, there's been a few parties involved in this project because there's a demolition side. There's the rebuild side. There's a representative with the demolition side that's available if you have questions. She has her hand raised online.
Is that like repurpose or something?
No, this is as an independent group.
I'm not even sure there's anything to save here, okay. Is there?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we do have the condition of like what is in condition enough that it could be salvaged. Clearly not all, but there's probably some things that are salvageable here.
Okay.
Katrina Horning, I almost want to hear the second building before we decide to make a decision with either. Can you present 407?
I don't know if we can.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've got to consider these separately.
Yeah, I think they're, even though they're going to have, the proposal is to have the same structure of a quadplex on the lot, they have to be considered separate of each other.
So can I follow that up real quick? So in other words, if the second one, if we say we don't approve a demolition, then what we're really approving on this first one is that one half of that proposed?
One of the two buildings.
One of the two.
It would just be, yeah, I mean, it's the same. It would be the same building. So it's not like it's a quadplex stretching over both lots.
But if we don't approve to demolish 407, then it would only be half is what we're looking at in this first one.
If that's what the decisions were, yes.
We're really only looking at the one half.
One half of the quad or two?
Is that
a quad?
Two quads.
Oh, it's two.
That's five.
See, that's, yeah, so this is,
no, so two quads, so we would potentially approve one quad and then talk about the other one later. That's all right.
I know it's confusing with them being very similar and being right next to each other, so.
Would someone like to make a motion on this?
One other question. Is the demo person a salvage person or just demo?
It's demolition, but from what I understand, I mean, if you want to ask them, but from what our conversations were, I think they were going to be able to consider, you know, could there be some deconstruction?
Yeah, because it's valuable. The 407 one is the one that has documented history. So that's why I was concerned with maybe pieces of it even being salvaged. Thank you.
Okay, so we have 403 right now before us. Can I get a motion?
I'm really having a hard time. I'm really having a hard time with how the massing relates to the historic structures, because now we're looking, if say we decide not to demo 407, you've got two contributing buildings on the street. So what are their frontages we're looking at? Are they 30 foot wide? Are they 40, 45 foot wide? See what I'm saying?
And there, I mean, one is the two-story, one's the one-story, and then you'll have this massive building next to a one-story contributing building.
We also seem to be missing a site plan with the setbacks and kind of how.
Well, here's.
Ah, is that
26 feet? That just said. What? Get dizzy.
And for TC, the zero setbacks, there's something about when it's in a TC zone, it's or adjacent to TC, they can have zero setbacks.
So are these TC or adjacent?
Yeah, they're TC.
In traditional commercial districts, you can have a zero setback and there's not a maximum lot coverage. Correct?
That is correct.
Okay, folks, can we get a motion of some sort?
Well, we could also, can we divide the petition saying approve or disapprove the demolition and then continue the.
So that's something that because the demolition permit cannot be released without a COA for the replacement building, you kind of have to do it all together. So if you were continuing that, you would be continuing the whole thing.
This is Beth again. The petitioner says the height is the same as the adjacent building or the neighboring blue house. The width is 28.
Of the contributing building is 28.
Yes. Yes.
And you're proposing 3810. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to that building's change over time. Would we like to have a motion of some sort? I mean, in absence of any sort of consensus, we could have a motion to continue this.
I think that's.
And go to 407 and maybe try to get consensus there. All right. Someone? Anyone?
Scott Kratzer, I motion to continue, 39th Street Development LLC contributing demolition, new construction, small parts 1 and 2 for 43 West 39th Street 25-000936-COA. To review how mass and height or
what make sure you have the date in there too when you want it to come back.
The October, no later than the October 22nd meeting in order to
consider
next one.
Consider mass and height.
Mass and the height.
What the contributing buildings on the block.
And the contributing buildings in reference to the contributing buildings on the block.
Katrina Horning, I second the motion.
Thank you. Having a motion tendered and properly seconded, let's go to vote. Courtney?
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
Kathy Levine, approve.
Scott Kratzer, approve.
Katrina Horning, approve.
Jeff Patrick, approve. Motion carries. Let's go on to the next petition. 39th Street Development LLC, 25-000943-COA, 47 West 39th Street. Demolition, new construction, small parts 1 and 2.
All right. Thank you. This is Caitlin again presenting this project at the neighboring property at 407 West 39th Street. So I'll probably just go through, since the submittal packet has the information we already went over. We'll go over some of this information. I'm trying to find the pictures. All right. So for the, I'll just show you. Okay. So this is the demolition packet. Cause they were separated out with the construction. So the first part of the submittal is, you know, the request. So these are going to be some pictures before, the property fire next door. So this was still intact here, but I wanted to at least show you this and also what the inside was looking like. So there's that, and then the more recent photos. So in this case, this was not obviously fire damage, but the water damage, or at least part of it, I think, was led to the rapid deterioration from when you saw the first photos from April to June. There was a structural report here as well. So the engineer based their comments on the visit after, you know, he did both again after the fire at the one at 403. So their comments were the subject residence has compromises to its exterior envelope, reducing its structural integrity and the total collapse of the rear of the structure. Prior attempts to reinforce the existing foundation appear to be ineffective, either through degradation or poor workmanship. So the recommendation is all existing foundation and framing components of the existing building should be completely demolished and rebuilt, perform all work by a licensed contractor, and so forth. So with that, you have seen the plans. They are the same as that. Staff also would recommend the same for 407 West 39th Street. If there's anything you want to revisit or look at again, let me know. Thank you.
Quick question, Kathy Lidvina. Was Cletus Bergen involved in this redesign as well?
Our understanding
the Carter Village subdivision
was it was the one at 403. Yeah. It was, I believe it was just the 403. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was shown here.
You want to talk to the petitioner, folks? Those are the questions for the petitioner. You know, as tragic as this is, this building would be very hard to save.
Courtney Bonnie, I think the thing that I'm struggling with is that the demolition permit and the replacement are kind of tied together, right? Because I'm going to echo some of the earlier comments here that the scale of what is proposed is, in my opinion, out of alignment with the rest of, you know, the surrounding buildings and the context of the neighborhood. So, again, I think this needs to be continued to where the scale and height and massing of that building is addressed. It looks like it's about twice as deep as the historic property that's next door to it. I mean, it's just, I think it's going to dwarf that property. So I think there just needs to be some adjustments to the scale of what is being proposed. So I think that's kind of what needs to happen in the interim and kind of more explorations about the scale of what's going back.
So why don't we consider continuing this and let's get more of a study for height and mass and contextually. And it sounds to me like we might be able to work through the demolition issue, but considering we've got to do them both as a package, well, let's go back and get maybe a little more in-depth study of contextually how they increase in size.
Maybe like an Scott Krautzer elevation in comparison to the historic structure as well. Echo Courtney.
Yeah, I mean, Courtney Bonnie, I mean, I understanding of trying to get as many units in here as possible, and certainly Savannah needs more housing, so I'm completely on board with that. Again, I think the issue here is the scale of what is being proposed, and maybe even just breaking down that massing or having some kind of variation or changes in heights. It's just visually, I think, not in context with what's surrounding, and I think that's the concern here.
Okay, that makes sense. And I certainly would like to see contextually what's around it. Why don't we go ahead and get a motion to continue this, and maybe we can get staff to come back and give us a little bit more of a contextual synopsis of what's there, what can come back in.
Kathy Levina, I make a motion to continue the petition of 407 West 39th Street, 25-000943-COA 39th Street Development LLC, contributing demolition, new construction, small parts 1 and 2 for 90 days through October 22nd, 2025.
Go a second.
Scott Crotzer, I second.
Thank you. Having a motion and properly seconded, we'll go to vote. We'll start with Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Scott Crotzer, approve.
Katrina Hording, approved.
Jeff Matrika, approve. Motion carries. Now we need to go back to the petition of Your Exterior Pros, Beth Barrows, 25-002814, COA, 1215 Java Place, windows and siding. And I would propose that we do a continuance on this till the next meeting so we can get the petitioner notified so they can come in and we can have a proper discussion.
I think unless Hind can confirm Beth Barrows is online, we attempted a call and an email and neither was responsive. So that may be worth having a continuance, and I can continue working with them as well on information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do that. Somebody like to give me a motion?
Trina Hornung. I move that the Historic Preservation Commission continue the petition of Exterior Pros, Beth Barrows, 25002814 COA, 1215 Java Place, until the October 22nd, 2025 meeting or sooner, so that the applicant has time to address any concerns and can be at the meeting.
All right.
Okay. Courtney Bonney, second.
Let's do a vote. Courtney.
Courtney Bonney, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Approve.
Scott Crotzer, approve.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I have to excuse myself to go pick up children.
Thank you.
Thank you. Business, but then we'll be done. But if you want to go ahead.
Oh, if you don't mind, just for a moment, I just wanted to remind everybody about the attendance policy. I think it might have been something with historic, because it seems like all of the historic boards had an issue with not being able to have a quorum. So please be mindful that if you're not going to be able to be at the meeting, you need to let the chair know. If Bree sends out something to you and you say you're going to come, please do your best to come. When we have to continue meetings, we still are all on a 45-day notice. Remember that, 45 days. And to, they don't care whether you can't come or not. It's like if we have to cancel, we still get like a window of, I think it's 14 days. It's a short period of time that we've got to try to schedule the meeting to meet. And we've got, you know, I've got 14 boards, so it's now me trying to add additional meetings to an already crowded schedule. So if you know you're going to, you know, I know people have vacations and stuff. It's summertime. I mean, things happen. But if you could just be mindful enough to let us know so that we can make sure that we've got the numbers. And if we do need to cancel, or if we do need to make adjustments, we can do it early enough where the applicants and stuff like that, they know early enough as well. It might be that we meet on, you know, on the Tuesday before the meeting or something else, just so that we can accommodate your schedule. But we spend a lot of time making sure that we come up with the dates for the meetings. Some of them, if the meeting date falls really close to a calendar, we try to push it to the next week because we know people probably are going to be out of town. So please put the dates for the meetings on your calendar for the upcoming year. And please don't forget to let Mr. Natrika know and let Bree know if you can't come. I would really appreciate it because it gets to be really stressful for my team. And it's stressful for the public. My phone's been ringing off the hook because not only, as I said, not only is this board, but it's my HDVR board as well. And they had to cancel twice. So, that's why I'm here to chat. But just want to make sure you please be very mindful about that and that you do have a time limit with regards to when we have to make decisions on these historic preservation cases because of the law.
Thank you. Caitlin, is this the part where we're talking about new business? All right, so new business. I have before me a very thoughtfully well-crafted petition from Kathy Ledvina regarding the request for archaeological survey on 1001 Whitaker Street. I think everybody's gotten a chance to see this. I guess we need a motion if this is something we want to
look at. Scott Krotzer, I'm move to consider or send the petition of this from the Historic Preservation Commission to Mayor Van Johnson and City Manager Jay Melder in reference to an archaeological study of the property. Is there an address of the property?
It's in the RE regarding.
Oh, sorry. It's where? This one? Oh, okay. Oh, see now. I've a request for the archaeological survey on 1001 Whitaker, 1015 Whitaker, 124 West Park Avenue, and the adjacent portion of Howard Street and sidewalks in Savannah and ordinance in accordance with Savannah's Archaeological Resource Protection Ordinance.
Katrina Hornung, I second the motion.
Okay, let's have a vote on that. We'll start with Katrina.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
Jeff Tantrika, approve. Motion carries, and I will take care of that this week.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then we just needed to – we have the demolition letter, and then if we want to go back and just acknowledge the notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments for inspections and stamp drawings.
Scott Krotzer, I move to accept the notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments, number 30, number 31, and number 32.
Katrina Hornung, I second.
Let's do a vote on that, Katrina.
Katrina Hornung, approve.
Scott Krotzer, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
Jeff Natrika, approve. Motion carries.
All right. Did anybody have anything else? Were we, if not, yeah, that's an acknowledgement of the city's decision. Yeah. And the COA did have the condition of approval to deconstruct and salvage what could be. So they should be following that still. Yep. And then our next meeting is August 27th, and we will see you then.
Thank you.
Thank you all.